All right, lads, how often do you change your underpants?
It's time to talk.
I'm listening to you on the radio at this time every morning since I'm at least 2 years old.
They blocked me from trying to get a refund. It's just appalling.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
You couldn't make it up, Les.
The voice of Cork. Who does that like?
Be part of the conversation, the Neil Prendeville Show with Elevate Credit Union. And one thing certainly being elevated, and that is the heat, the temperature and the sunshine. There's a lovely headline making the sun this morning. The sun has got his hat on. Don't you just love it? The sun has got his hat on. The Sun newspaper clearly identifying the sun as male. Ireland sizzling at the start, they say, of a 2 week heat wave that will see temperatures over 30 degrees somewhere. Whether we get 30 degrees or higher, I don't know, but we'll take it all day long. The sizzle continues, and that's lovely. Many of the papers this morning are dominated with the Garda hunt now. There is a manhunt underway after a young mother was brutally beaten to death in her own home. The front of the Mail says manhunt in Kerry after a woman in her 40s was beaten to death in her home. They say that she was discovered, oh my God, she was discovered by her teenage daughter. Dead. Originally from New York, she relocated to Ireland several years ago, and she has one daughter named as she is Jamie Carney in her 40s. Now, that's picked up by the Mirror this morning, who say that she was killed in her own home. The suspect has fled after the savage beating. The Mirror identified this individual as an asylum seeker on the run after the mum was beaten to death, of Middle Eastern origin, they say, and hunted now by An Garda Síochána. The Star carries it as well of the fleeing of this Middle Eastern man after the brutal assault and death of Jamie Carney. Her 13-year-old daughter, according to the Star this morning, raised the alarm. It's absolutely savage and tragic. Papers also this morning talk about, you know what, I mean, imagine if everybody had solar panels and lots of them, right? And they were all connected to the grid and everything was great and hunky-dory. This would be a real time to see solar panels do their thing with regards to the pressure of power and energy costs. But the Mail this morning, and I'm just mentioning this in passing, it's a quite lengthy story, but the upshot of it is that data centres in Ireland are using almost a quarter of electricity in Ireland. Data centres, they are absolutely gobbling up the power. And I suppose you could juxtaposition that by saying, well, they're providing funding and taxation to the Exchequer, and they're also providing jobs. I get all of that. But do you know all of the massive, big, huge wind turbines that we're seeing all over the country, more and more of them being erected? Are all of those pulling their own weight? Like, are they all producing electricity, and is all that being used in the grid? I remember doing something on this some time back where they were saying that a lot of the time that kind of power that was being generated wasn't being used, and it was being dumped. It looks as if the Exchequer will have to dump more money into Donnybrook and Montrose to RTE because they're looking for another bailout. How many more times will this have to be a rinse and repeat job within RTE, continually looking for extra money? Because they just can't make the figures work. So now, on top of everything else that they were given in the past, they want, just like last year, they want more money. Last year, they'd be given something like 41 million as a top up. And this year, they're looking for 55 million extra as a top up. Bailout after bailout after bailout. So the model is broken, and television in the future, of course, will be coming under even more pressure because more and more people, particularly young generations, you look someone now that's 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, they're not watching television. They will never have a television set. They will never, ever, ever have to pay a television license. But even now, the amount of households that have no TV is getting ever closer to 500,000, which is kind of 21% of the total people who have homes or live, or, you know, 4/5 of them do have televisions. But the figure of those that are not with the television continues to rise, and that will just continue to increase. So the model is broken, but yet we seem to just continually throw more and more money at it. I mean, if it means anything to you, the Sun this morning says that Patrick Keelty has signed up for another 3 years at the helm of the Late Late Show. And every time that story makes the newspapers, I sometimes check the comments under stories like that, and they're saying that it's no longer fit for purpose. That's a show that needs to be abandoned or it needs a major reboot. But if you're a fan of it, good luck to you. Patrick Keelty at the helm for another 3 years. And he's quoted in The Sun this morning as saying it's one of the greatest gigs in the world. Now, his pay is $250,000 a year, according to The Sun, the Mail, and it has been $250,000 for the past 3 years. Although he's made a little more than that for extracurricular activity. But that's only kind of as a by the way. He can't earn more, and nobody can earn more than Kevin Backhurst, the Director General. But he's looking to the government to increase his own salary. And that's, as the Mail said, got tongues wagging that if his salary goes up, they were saying, well, that could mean that Keelty would get even more money himself because nobody can earn more than the DG. I don't know. He's already on $250,000, Kevin Backhurst, but he makes like €337,500, because you really have to take into consideration, this is public money. This is a private sector, be none of our business, but it's taxpayers' money at the same time where they're looking for a bailout. So you got the $250,000, which is his salary. He's got a car allowance of €25,000. And he's got pension contributions of €62,500. Imagine that. Isn't it absolutely wonderful? $337,500. There's a girl by the name of Claudia Connell that I'm going to be watching in the coming weeks in the Mail, because she is and has started to detox from coffee. She loves it. She starts the morning with a flat white at home. She's got an €800 coffee machine. And she, like me, just loves coffee. It's just one of this thing. I've never had any issues with it. I've never got palpitations or heart racing. I just love coffee. So she says, I'm finding it. She's already started. She's hooked up to all sorts of different monitors and things like that, actually, see if it's going to have an impact on her health. And she's wearing a thing called an Oura ring. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Cost her something like €370. It's full of all sorts of sensors that pick up all sorts of biometric readings of her sleep patterns and her stress and her heart rate as she detoxes from coffee. But she says, I honestly would find it easier to give up food than coffee. I mean, I don't know, to be quite honest with you, if my life would be worth living if I didn't have a cup of coffee first thing in the morning, freshly brewed coffee with fresh beans. But it's about like everything, you would kind of get used to it if there was a reason that you had to give it up. And she's saying, coffee has never given me palpitations, but I don't know why she wants to be bothered doing it otherwise. But she says, the most common side effects for those that give up caffeine are a racing heart, poor sleep, nervous disposition, and the sensors apparently will pick up, should be picking up, anxiety, disrupted sleep, induced temporary spikes in your heart. These are the things that impact you if you drink coffee or too much coffee. And also blood pressure increases. It can even increase your cholesterol levels. I mean, could anything so beautiful and so nice and so tasty and so invigorating have such a negative effect on you? But we'll see how she gets on in the coming weeks and months. And meanwhile, to other home issues or things in the home that we love, I see this morning the Dog Trust Ireland have come out with Ireland's favourite dog names. I'm quite sure it's a much lengthier list, but all I have are like three or four different names as being officially Ireland's favourite dog names. And they are Luna, Bailey, Bella, Daisy, and Charlie. I mean, there are some quirky ones in there, like Oreo Speedwagon Murphy and Indiana Bones. I like those ones. But Luna, Bailey, Bella, Daisy, and Charlie. If you have a doggy Bow Wow with those names, then you're part of the herd and you're following the trend. And those are the big ones. And then, if you've been on holidays or you're going on holidays, expect to see a lot more people, tourists, wandering around in swimwear and bare chests. You may well even see them inside in pubs having a loft or sitting down for lunch or dinner in swimwear and bare chested, which is all very well, I suppose, if you've got a six pack. But if you've got a big, massive gut, then it's probably not the nicest thing in the world for others to have to be looking at. But it's none of my business, except for the fact that more tourist attractions are pushing back and fining tourists wandering around bare-chested or in swimwear. And amongst them is the fishing village by Lake Como. Varenna, it's called. It comes now with a €200 fine if you're walking around the village shirtless or in swimwear. But if you're wearing togs and you've got no shirt on, how do you pay the fine? I mean, where are they keeping their debit card or where are they keeping their mobile phone? But that's the latest one. More and more. They're also talking about limiting the amount of groups of people that can walk around and you know, go wandering around the beautiful cobblestone streets. But anyway, that's something that's quite interesting, because you will notice that if you're heading over on the holidays, particularly, you see it, I mean, obviously, the more populated holiday resorts of Spain, I suppose you'd see it an awful lot more. And there's other fellas going travelling, and a big shout out to Tom O'Connor, Rory Casey and Sean Foley. They are about to set off on a 12,000-kilometre journey this coming Saturday to raise funds for Marymount. It's a story carried in the Echo this morning. They're going from Cork to Central Asia as part of the Langers in a Banger from Mayfield to Mongolia. And they're raising funds. It's a 12,000-kilometre trip. And they're heading off, and apparently there's a bit of a send off in Henchy's there on I think it was last Friday they got together to celebrate the start of their adventure. Like, I think actually, if the lads want a bit of advice, they should hook up with Doc Martin, who for many years worked here on this program and worked here in Red FM, and he headed off years ago in some sort of a clapped out SUV. A small little thing, which actually didn't let them down. And he went and he did that trip with his dad from Cork. I think it was probably more, to be fair, it was from probably Ballylanders to Mongolia. So he might be able to give him, it was a small little Suzuki Jimny, wasn't it? That little yoke.
He did 10,000 miles in it, yeah, with his dad. It was a 1998 Suzuki Jimny.
Well, the lads are going in a 1.2 Renault Clio. Three of them. That's a small enough car for three big lads.
I'd say their characters. I reached out to them as well, actually. And just to correct you there, it's actually Aura Ring, not Aura, Ura, or whatever you
are. You off, yeah?
Yeah, I am.
You're off again. God, that didn't take long, did it? Like 10 minutes into the show? How do you say it? Aura?
Like Aura.
That's Flora. Stupid yoke.
It's not a stupid yoke.
Stupid yoke.
My brother has one, actually.
Drink coffee. If it doesn't get your heart racing, then it's good for you, for God's sake. But anyway, it would be good to chat with the lads. And also, maybe Doc might be able to give them a couple of tips on how to get from here to Mongolia safely and perhaps back again. But, you know, we love our city. We really and truly do. And I remember dealing with this story some time back. Nothing has changed with regards to the defiant leprechauns on Patrick Street, known as the funky leprechauns. But Cork Bureau are picking up on the story now, because some say they're a bit of crack, but others are having their heads wrecked from what they call the ear-splitting noise from their speakers. It's Patrick Street's funky leprechauns, boys and girls. And they're an attraction that Cork could do without, according to Cork Bureau this morning. City Council now, in an effort to get them to go, just go away, have removed the bus shelter where they've been performing for years. I've seen the leprechauns performing nowhere near bus shelters, right outside BT. They set up there and off they go. I mean, they got speakers there, right? And they play pop hits, including the songs of Michael Jackson, while banging giant wooden spoons together. Now, if you had a business adjacent to them, I'd say your brain would be absolutely fried. But some people in the area have found them insanely annoying. But the duo themselves, Jerry Barry and his nephew Damien Barry, have told Cork Bureau that they will stand their ground, and they claim they're appreciated by locals and tourists alike. Gerard himself has said, "Well, I've been brought to court several times. I've had several €350 fines, and I haven't paid even one yet. And I suppose I could end up in jail." They've been a fixture of Patrick Street for years, and I mean, imagine the tourists who may be inside the city for an hour find it fantastic, you know, absolutely love it. But for others who are just there, it's like as if you're handcuffed to them for life if you're working in a business adjacent to them. But anyway, there you have it. The leprechauns on Patrick Street still there, and have no intention of moving or disappearing anytime soon.
Get on to Prenderville.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prenderville Show on Red FM.
Great day yesterday. Everybody enjoyed the banter and the laugh. So more of that today as we plough along through the programme. Can I just mention, though, because Susan got in touch with me, particularly at this time of the year. Stand by there, Lawrence. I won't be long. I just want to mention this because we're running out of time. It has to do with the heat and cars. And I know I spoke about pets and dogs there a few minutes ago and dog names and what have you. But she says, "I want to draw your attention to a distressing situation I witnessed recently. Two occasions I found dogs left unattended in cars. Once at Dunn Stores in Ballyvaland Shopping Centre and again at the Blackpool Shopping Centre. Each time I asked the centre to make an announcement for the owner to go back, and I contacted the Gardaí. The Gardaí offered to call the registered owners of the cars and ask them to return to the car straight away, etc., etc. While I understand it's not the centre's responsibility to police this, more should be done to stop this behaviour. Leaving a dog in a car in this hot weather is dangerous and can have serious consequences. I think shopping centres should consider installing clear signage at entrances, reminding drivers not to leave dogs unattended, particularly during this hot weather. Even a simple reminder could help prevent harm. Now, I'm reading that out on behalf of Susan, just to remind people that it's not a right thing to do. It's not a good thing to do, and it's not fair on the animals. You might say you're only away for a few minutes, whatever the case may be, but come on. Listen, I know you can probably bring dogs into a lot more shopping centres now, as into the mall areas, but not into the shops themselves, but probably best left at home. And then one other one, because we're talking about tourism and heading out overseas. And Marian Douglas is right. Perhaps others have noticed this. She says, is it me or is anyone else getting annoyed by the check-in and check-out times for hotels and Airbnbs? I was in a hotel recently in Dublin. Check-in was at 4 p.m. Check-out was 11 a.m. Then at the weekend, I was in Airbnb in Kerry. Check-in, 3 p.m. Check-out the next morning, an astounding 10 a.m. We're not even getting 24 hours in these places anymore. We're also paying a premium. The check-in times are getting later and the check-out times are getting earlier. It's beyond a joke, says she. You're absolutely right. I mean, it's not uncommon now to have a check-in, certainly for an Airbnb and hotels, 4 p.m. in the afternoon. I've had that personally myself, 4 p.m. And I've had check-outs as early as 10 a.m. the next morning. So instead of getting 24 hours, which is what you're paying for, you're actually getting only 18 hours. And you've got to wonder why that is, possibly to get, cut down on bills and energy costs and also perhaps on labour and housekeeping costs as well. But you are right. It is happening and it's getting shorter and shorter. It used to be midday checkout and it used to be like, would it be fair to say 2 o'clock check-in to give them that 2 hour period then to do the rooms and what have you. But anyway, your thoughts on that are welcome. Text 0868104106. It's annoying because it's damn expensive now. And the days of Airbnb, I know they're a better option because you can cook and you're self-contained and all sorts of things like that. But the days of them being economical or value for money or cheap are well, well gone. But anyway, Lawrence travelled recently off to Arizona. Morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you doing?
I'm great. And I really love your correspondence. I was talking to a lady on Monday who was in Canada and was approached by a Canadian lady who heard her Irish accent and they began a lovely conversation. And then that prompted your call, right, with your trip to Arizona. So do tell. How'd you get on?
Yeah, well, I think you've just told the pinnacle of the story. But anyway, my two sons were going bird watching some years ago, my eldest and my youngest. My eldest goes all over the world bird and animal watching. So they were all booked in to go to a place called Sierra Vista in Arizona. That's down near the Mexican border to see a specific bird that he wanted to see. But my youngest son, his block release for the electrical trade came and it clashed with the holiday, which was everything paid for. So my son asked me to go with him. So off we went and we went to Arizona.
Right. Okay. I'm just curious to watch one particular bird.
Well, yes, but I mean, my son would have a list of birds that he'd be able to see while we were there. But there was one in particular that was very hard to find and it. They sort of transported at a certain time of the year. They were going from one place to the other and they'd stop off in this place called Sierra Vista.
Right.
In this particular forest of trees near a particular river for a certain amount of time. So you only had a certain amount of time to find them and to see them, which made it even more interesting. You know?
Okay. And just as a quick, by the way, did he see and find the bird?
Yeah, but that could put on the story. Yeah, but we did eventually. A biker actually took us into the place where the American army keep all their contact for space and all that kind of thing. The security was huge. Trying to get in, there was an ordeal, but this guy had been an ex-soldier and he was able to get us in. And we eventually spotted the bird in that particular
place. Right. So that aspect of the trip paid off. But as part of it, you went to Dodge City, right?
Yeah, we were car wise in the stone throw of that city, so we went to see they were the gunfight of York Kirkwall was. We didn't know what to expect. But when we drove and parked the car, it was like walking onto a film set because it was the real deal. People were, their papers, everyday dress was like, you know, the cowboys all dressed. The stagecoach was there up and down all the time. And all of the buildings were those timber buildings, you know, with the saloon doors, where you go up the steps onto the platform and you walk along and you'd hear every footstep that's going. So we got out of the car and we started at one side of the town. We said we'd do a little bit of window shopping just to see what the place was all about.
Yeah.
We started walking on window to window. And after a while, we heard footsteps behind us. And that's fine. But then the footsteps stopped every time we stopped. And we sort of looked at each other and went, oh, yeah, it's okay. So we just kept going and the footsteps kept going again. So then my son said, we'll just hurry up a little bit and see what happens. So we passed on a few buildings, a few shop windows, and so did the footsteps. And every time we stopped, they stopped. Paul said to me, let's hurry up a bit. So we hurried up and the footsteps hurried up. He said to me, we're crossing the road. We're crossing the road, Dad. I'm not happy here. So we crossed the road and we started up the other side and the footsteps were behind us again.
Did you know those footsteps? Said, like, were there spurs jingling, you know? Like,
they were the real...
The cowboy thing. Spurs that they wear.
Yeah. They were absolutely the real thing. So we hadn't seen this before. So Paul said to me, Dad, he said, we're heading for the car. So we made a beeline on the platform for the car. And because we were rushing a bit, a voice behind us said, do you smell a gut? And the two of us looked at each other and we said, what? We turned around and there was this guy, this 7-foot cowboy. I mean, he was built to match. He was huge. And he had the guns and the holsters and the whole shebang. And he came up to us and he turned out to be a gentle giant. He says, I'm so sorry, he said. I was trying to catch up with you to listen to the accent. To know, were you from Ireland? And we said, yeah, we are actually. What he said, I'll tell you now, he said, I got my family tree some years ago, right? And I discovered my ancestors were from Connemara. So I planned a trip over for a few weeks and I ended up staying there for 3 years. And he was a fluent Irish speaker.
Go away.
So you've got this, yeah. Yeah, you've got this giant of a cowboy, fully armed. And I asked him, are the guns real? Yeah, he said, it's guns are allowed in Arizona. Everything is real here. So you have this gun-wielding cowboy.
7-foot cowboy.
Arizona, who could speak better Irish than we were hoping he wouldn't speak in Irish because we could only reply to an extent. But it was really, really funny. Like, I mean, come on.
Oh, my God. What are the chances of that? What are the chances? So did you take him for a big cowboy steak then or in one of the saloons?
No. I tell you, no. We just stood standing and talking for about a half an hour nonstop. He told us all about his ancestors and his family and Connemara and the whole shebang. And then he shook hands with us and he apologised again. And we went about going to connect.
We don't see people like you all that often in these here parts.
Yeah. The real deal, you know. So
it really was like stepping back in time. But it, this isn't fakery for tourists. It's real.
No. People were going about their business and they didn't even see you. They wouldn't, you know, you weren't a stranger or a tourist or anything. It was just people going about their business as if you were, as if you had stepped into a television or a TV set.
Into a time machine, isn't it? Absolutely. They say that those states, the likes of your Arizona, Colorado, places like that, are absolutely gorgeous to visit. They're just so beautiful.
It was really, really lovely. And to see all the red earth and the red mountains, everything was red, all the earth was red. It was really, really gorgeous. Yeah.
I had some friends who did a trip like that across those states. And I know I mentioned steak and it's never, you know, food is never too far from my topics of conversation, but they're absolutely massive. Did you eat?
Well, we didn't actually eat there. We went elsewhere because, like, Paul is meticulous. Paul has 5 or 6 holidays a year. or bird and animal watching, and he has every 5 minutes made out to a T before he goes. His planning is just amazing. I just sat. That's all I done. I just sat and walked wherever we were going.
Yeah.
I see everything from the sitting on the plane to everything.
That's great when someone else is looking after all that stuff, isn't it?
One of the best weeks of my life, I must say.
I'm so delighted. And tell me, you mentioned the OK Corral. Is that in Dodge?
Yeah. It's still there, yeah, still there, yeah.
Okay, so what was that? Was that Wyatt Earp, or what was that story? who shot who?
I don't know who shot who, but it wasn't T.R. Ewing in here.
Gunfight at the OK Corral. You were living the dream, my man. You certainly were.
Yeah, it was really, really great. When we tried to get into that army base, we didn't realize it was an army base. We were surrounded by soldiers and guns when we tried to get in to see the bird, because the tourists, we bumped into tourists, always seen that bird in such a place, and we went there and we were surrounded and escorted back out by the army because it was a high
You were lucky, man. You weren't arrested for espionage, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
That would have been another story again. Oh, well, listen, the OK Corral, that was a gunfight there in 1881. It was a 30-second shootout. You think it would have gone on for a couple of hours. In Tombstone, Arizona, where Wyatt Earp, his brother Virgil, and his other brother Morgan, and Doc Holliday, it even sounds fabulous reading the names, confronted the cowboy gang. And there was a big shootout. Wyatt Earp remarkably emerged completely unscathed. And there was many a Western made around about that one, wasn't there?
There was, and like to hear you mention those names there now, like, I literally visually went back in time there, because we grew up with all the cowboy films. I'm 75 now, so like the cowboy films and were brilliant for us back then, you know.
Oh, I love a good cowboy film. They're just not making them anymore, so they're not.
No, but all the oldies are. You have all the oldies still on in TG Car every Saturday night.
Oh, that's worth a check out. Anyway, I'm so delighted you had a great trip, Lawrence, and thanks for sharing. I do appreciate it. Take care.
My pleasure, and have a lovely day.
You too, all the best. I think one of the best. I mean, I've seen many great Westerns down through the years, but would you say Unforgiven, Clint Eastwood playing the part of that guy, William Money out of Missouri? Wasn't that one of the greatest ever? It was absolutely insane with regards to the lineup. Clint Eastwood, Gene Hackman, Morgan Freeman, Richard Harris won 4 Oscars. If you love your Westerns and you haven't seen that one, you're in for a treat. Unforgiven. I think it was one of the best I ever saw. Back after the break. Text 0868-104-106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
What a laugh we had yesterday with Tony for the laughs and all of the different stories. Many people got in touch saying that was some show yesterday. I'm laughing out loud here, lads, with all the different stories. He's brilliant. Just love the stories. Happy days of fun. And these are the kind of summary stories that we love doing, because there's enough doom and gloom out there. Oh my God, what a legend. That guy yesterday with the stories around the North Mall was hilarious. I'm drinking my tears. I needed this laugh today, I can tell you, says Kaz. Tony, hilarious. Definitely deserves all of those passes. I don't know how many he managed to get from Emer and from Viv, but I'm quite sure they looked after him with lots of summer passes to go and visit all sorts of lovely tourist attractions. And you have a chance as well this morning to score some of our passes from those lovely, lovely family passes we're giving away for our beautiful county. Best text, best email, best phone call on air. So get involved in the conversation. Text 0868-104-106. I'm mad keen because the first jobs really took off. I'll talk to Alfie in a second, but I'm mad keen to talk to the person who sent me this one-liner. I had the job of sticking peas and beans, etc., etc., into the barn racks in Thompson's, comma, embarrassing. Full-time job. I know we've been trying to contact you, but we're having no luck, but I'd love to know more about how you go about putting sticking the peas and the beans and the rag and the stick and everything else that went into the barn racks back in the old day. Anyway, keep them coming. Text 0868-104-106. So, Alfie.
Yeah, Neil.
Okay, we're going back a bit now, because you don't mind me saying you're 72 years young. So go ahead.
So I left school at 12 years of age. And my first job was inside in Washington Street in a chemist called Johnson's.
Okay, so just and ahead of that, if you left school at 12, did you complete primary school or what?
No, I lied about my age because there was 10 of us in family, and that those days, like, you came out of school 13, 14, but I was only 12 and a half.
Right, okay.
I went into the School of Commerce after school, after primary school, but it just wasn't my thing. So I worked from 12 and a half up until I retired at 67.
Did you get a full-time job at 12 years old?
I did, yeah, yeah. And I was with a man in Washington Street called Mr. Johnson, who was a chemist, and to just above the courthouse there on the right-hand side. But he also had a chemist shop on Dennehy's Cross, and later he opened a chemist shop on Victoria Cross, where he lived.
Are any of them still around?
They are, and I think it's the same family are running it, because the name is still there in Victoria Cross. Now, the other one is still there at Dennehy's Cross. There was a post office next to it. Right across the road was Dennehy's Cross Garage.
Okay, okay.
But that post office is still there today, and you'd see it, the green painting.
Okay.
And the chemist shop was next door to it.
So you're a 12-year-old, so with a full-time job, yeah, in a chemist. What was your job?
Pardon?
What was your job?
It was similar to working for a butcher. You made house deliveries on the bicycle, you know, so delivering around, like, prescriptions to mostly houses around the Model Farm Road, you know, in that area there, like, you know. But he was a brilliant man because I remember it was £3.50, potentially, you know, 3.50 we used to call her at the time. But he'd pay me on the Friday a little brown envelope, and he'd give me an extra 10 shilling note, and he'd say, take that home now to your mother. You know, brilliant man. But he closed up that shop and he went to work. He went to open up that Victoria Cross. And today, that bike that I used to drive around, ride around, I was called it the company vehicle. I was one of the first ever to have a company vehicle. But it's still up over the chemist shop on Victoria Cross. That bike is still there today. Yeah.
I got to go and see this building and see this bike.
Yeah. It's just before you go to the county hall on the right-hand side. Do you remember there was a pub there? It burnt down there some time ago, a few years ago.
Western Star?
No. To be up further, there was a...
On the corner.
That's right.
By the straight road.
That same bike that I drove as a 12-year-old is up over the chemist. It's rust. It's a rust.
So your 60-year-old delivery bike is still there?
Still there, yeah, today. But I tell you a funny incident. There was one particular day when you'd come back after making the few deliveries, you'd just wait around the shop for the next delivery, you know. But this particular day, like, he gave me 3 or 4 prescriptions to take up around Model Farm Road. And that time you'd open the door and you'd walk in, or there might be somebody upstairs and they'd say, look, would you bring the prescription up to me, I can't go down or whatever, you see. So I had 2 prescriptions left to deliver, and I was in a bit of a hurry, you see. So I just handed one to the woman, went up the road about another 5 or 6 houses up, and the same thing again. I think I put it in the letterbox. So a couple of days after, one of the women came into the chemist shop, and Mr. Johnson, God rest him, know he's dead and gone years, he says, my God, he says, you're looking great today. He says, like that. You're up out of bed and everything. Says she, I'm feeling great, says she. But she, you didn't give me enough tablets. So he says, I made up the prescription. He says, I surely did. Says, you know, she said, you only gave me 3 or 4 days. So says he, and how are you? Says she, I'm feeling great. made up another prescription and gave it to her. And about 4 days after, this other woman came in, and she says, you gave me the wrong prescription, she says. She says, I have about 2 weeks of tablets still left. I was after giving, we say, Mrs. Murphy, her, Mrs. McCarthy's tablets.
Oh, my God, Murphy. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and even though she got the wrong tablets, she was able to come down into the shop, and she was telling him, man, she was feeling great.
Almighty. What was there any trouble over that?
No, not at all. I heard no more. Like, he just gave me the eye as if to say, you made a cock up there, like, you know.
I know, but it could have been a lot worse. The pub you're talking about was the Crow's Nest. I think they built homes there, didn't they?
I tell you another good one about that, actually. Years after, I was a milkman, you know. I actually delivered to yourselves above 96 FM.
Where? In Wellington Road or in White's Cross?
Wellington Road. I remember you going in and out, and I tell you another good one about yourself, actually.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
I'll tell you this one first. But
I was robbing milk and taking it home now,
I was after finishing my milk run one particular Saturday, you know, and that time my lads were fairly young, like, so he used to come with me every Saturday. You'd be in and out collecting the money as you went along on the Saturday, Friday and Saturday. So we came along Sunday as well, and along there, now where the old, where that pub was, you see. And I see all the smoke billowing up through the back of the building, like, and I said, Jesus, there's a fire there. But they were all inside, and they're drinking away and eating away, like, because the doors were wide open. And I says, my son, his name is Kevin. I says, Kevin, run in there, I says, and tell him the pub is on fire. And he ran in, and Jesus, I pulled that time. It was easy enough to park along there. You couldn't know, like.
Not a chance.
But I pulled up the footpath, and I was, oh, Jesus, I said, what am I after doing? I'm after sending them into a building that's blazing. But they were serving away, and they never knew the place was on fire.
They never knew?
They never knew. They were walking away. I could see them at the counter. You could see in that time the door would be open, and you could
see. Was the fire upstairs or something?
To the back of the building, I reckon. There must have been a kitchen at the back of the building.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and I circled around. He ran back out. I said, did you tell them? He said, I did.
It's a lovely text came in there from a fellow by the name of Michael Santry. He said, I did my training with Bill Johnson, the pharmacist. Then opened my own pharmacy next door on Washington Street. So Bill moved to Victoria Cross then. Dad worked there for 62 years. The lad on the air now, Alfie, probably knew my dad, Michael Santry. Go away, did you?
I did. And there was a lad next door. He ended up after above in Kelleher's buildings. You know those red brick houses above in Kelleher? They're still there today. Like, there's a little in behind there as you go up Dillon's Cross. There's a little circle, like Roach's buildings now. There was a man there.
Hang on a second. Didn't Frank O'Connor live in one of those?
He did.
I know those, yeah.
Sculpture as well. Murphy live just below that.
They're beautiful.
There were some beautiful people in there, like, oh, really fabulous people.
What great stories. It wasn't unheard of to, because I've spoken with a lot of people who quit school at a very young age and went out to earn. Yeah. And a lot was out of necessity to a large extent, yeah, because you were from a big family.
Oh, yeah. That was the thing, like, once you got... And I remember my mother, I came from a terrace called Mount Nebo Avenue. It's kind of, it runs parallel with Blarney Street, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember she dictating to me how to write a letter. And she'd say, when you're putting down your address now, she'd say, it's very hard to get an answer to anything if you're living in Granabrah or Churchfield at the time, like, you know? It had a funny kind of a name, but there was fabulous people there. I never knew why, actually, because it was the same all over the city.
But it was true. People were discriminated against by virtue of their address,
But the funny thing about it was, like, there was fabulous people there. But I remember she dictating, I couldn't write a letter or anything, but I could write, but I didn't know how to put the words together.
You're only 12 years old.
She'd say to us, when you're putting down, you're applying for a job, she'd say, write down then your address. I'll give the number, not a shame, 90 Mount Nebo, she'd say, off Blarney Street.
I'm looking at, because Emer just tracked down, thank you as well, a buddy of mine, Tim, also sent it to me. Johnson's Pharmacy, Victoria Cross, it's the most beautiful pink front facade to it. And there's your messenger bike up on the roof of it.
Up on the roof, and it's 60 years old, yeah.
Oh, my God. Bike. You must get very nostalgic when you pass that, Alfie.
I do. I have photographs of it and everything. Some of my sisters actually took photographs of it there recently. They heard about it, yeah.
Well, listen, good morning to all of them in Johnson's Pharmacy.
Yeah.
Story.
And the river then ran behind those houses. You know how there's two sort of, it breaks there like when it comes down behind the waterworks. Half the river sort of goes to one side and the other half goes in behind those houses. You know, when it comes down beyond where the open bats were.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd have a fishing rod. I'd bring a fishing rod with me. Like, and when I wasn't on call, I'd go down the backyard and I'd be fishing rods to get some fabulous trout.
Great stories. You have great memories. Yeah. They were wonderful times, I'm sure. They were tough in many ways, but life's adventure for a 12-year-old.
Like, it was everybody did something similar at the time that came out of school early, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But would you believe, Neil, I'm working from 12 years of age. I ended up driving buses for a chap called Billy Welch. I used to deliver milk to him above Mayfield, actually. I heard he's not too well there recently. Just, Billy, how are you, if he's listening?
Ah, that's kind.
From Alfie. But there were fabulous times. Like, I remember a guy I worked with. I worked with in Taylor Keith as well. They were up Victoria Pass as well, up Farnley Road. But he often said to me, he said, you might not have a trade, he said, but once you have a licence, you'll never be short of work.
As so, a driving licence, you mean?
Yeah, but once you had your driving licence, that time, like, you know, but it turned out to be right, because no matter what, like, I worked all my life. I never signed on the exchange or anything. So, like, even though I came out of school early, once you were willing to work, so... Anyone looking for holiday work now, if they're willing to drive a 60-year-old bike, go to Johnson's Victoria.
Take it down off the roof.
And that job is open to them.
Well, it's lovely chatting with you, really and truly. Thanks so much for taking the call. Take care of yourself. All the best, Alfie. Take care. Take care. Text 0868 104 106. Do share. Pick up the phone 0818 104 106 after the break.
Listen to the Neil Prendeville Show wherever you go. Download the Go Loud app, the new home of Red FM.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
We talked yesterday as well about, you know, the amount of early houses that were still left. And I mentioned an article that was written some time back by the late, great Jim McKeown, wonderful Cork historian and author and all-around great raconteur. And at one stage, he actually wrote an article for the Echo. The headline of the Echo was A Stroll Around Cork's 33 Early Morning Pubs. I think there's a couple of them left now at this stage, possibly two. I think Charlie's is one, the Welcome Inn is another. I don't know of any others, perhaps there's more. But the Echo published that article then, where he was talking about, say, the mid-70s, where he called Cork intimate as any Irish village. But yet it had 33 early morning pubs. They opened at 7 o'clock in the morning, six mornings a week, and each one would be bulging at the seams. And he spoke about Conn's American Bar on Princes Street, and then he went up George's Quay to the Anchor, and then he went over to the gates of Beamish and Crawford to Cott's Bar, over to the Washington Inn, the Raven, down the Colgate to Clifford's, over to the Roundy House, Cott's, O'Connor's, Dennehy's, the Market Bar, the Haven, the Ivy Leary, the Oriental and the Ferryboat Inn, which would be down along the river a bit. And then there's a Hearn's. And then over again on the other side of the river, you've got the Port Bar, the Marina, the Buchel and the Sextant. All of these were early houses. Heafy's, the Black Swan, the Riverview, the Donkey's Ears. You went across then over to the bridge at Parnell Place to Toomey's, the Welcome Inn, the Ivy Leaf, the Queen's Bar at the corner, which probably was part of the Queen's Hotel, and then to the Traveller's Rest next to the bus station. Back over the river again for another cluster of pubs on Patrick's Quay, including the Tusker Bar, Travers, the Green Bow and the Inishfallon. And when you add them all up, it comes to 33 early morning houses way back in the day. Bit of Cork nostalgia and history for you. Text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. And we'll pick up the conversation after 10.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation, the Neil Prendeville Show with Elevate Credit Union. Right, a selection of texts from the past couple of days in no particular order on different topics of conversation. One of them yesterday had to do with a small little shop down Drawbridge Street back in the 60s and 70s that sold a particular fizzy drink that somebody was trying to identify, right? Well, we have managed, with the help of the wonderful listeners to this programme, to find out that the shop in Drawbridge Street was owned by Pat and Mary O'Connell. And Joanne told me that, and she says, was the drink that person was talking about called Cadet, C-A-D-E-T? I'm not so sure that Cadet was around that long ago. Perhaps a moment of correction on that. Others were suggesting that it was a lemonade drink made by Jennings. Others thought it might have been a lemonade drink made by DC's. Another person said that that was a drink called Little Nora, which was possibly the baby sister of Tanora. I don't know. Was it called Sinalco, which I think is actually Spanish for no alcohol, isn't it? Sinalco. Nobody believes me that there was a drink by that name back in the 60s and 70s. It tasted a bit like Lilt, if my memory is correct, says Kay. Well, you are right. Sinalco is a drink, and it was first produced in 1902. And it holds the title as the oldest soft drink in Europe. And it's still going strong 124 years later. German in origin, I'm told. And just keep those texts coming. Regarding your recent conversations about age restrictions for gigs at Live in the Marquee, it can be very confusing in Cork. The Wash Pub on Washington Street is over 18s during the week and over 21s at the weekend. So people that go there during the week with no issue can't go and visit again at the weekend. It's ridiculous. This is in place during the college year and summertime. I suppose over 18s during the week because you might have college students, and over 21 at the weekends because the college students have gone home or something. I don't know the logic of it. Football has been coming home since 1966, says John in Kinsale. It must have took a wrong turn along the way if it's taking that long to get home. If the noisy neighbours next door win it, we won't hear the end of it for another 60 years, says John in Kinsale. But at the same time, what would be so wrong about supporting England to win the World Cup? They are our nearest neighbours. Text 0868 104 106. Talking about mispronouncing things, particularly with regards to tourists and places around Cork and city, suburbs and county, a Scottish couple once asked me outside Middleton, what was the best way to get to Youghal? What was the best way to get to Youghal? Do I have to tell you what Youghal is? I don't think so. And then lunchtime drinking was a topic during the week. I was saying, well, it happens, or it used to happen a lot in the UK. I think that was possibly a chat I was having with Coleman from the Hennessy family, from the Stirrup in White's Cross. Many years ago, my cousin was a barmaid at a weekend television station in London. And one morning, she took me along to wait for her as she served the staff at the TV station alcoholic drinks at lunchtime. I think it would be a dangerous thing to be half caught anywhere near a camera or a microphone, for sure. And then others then involving other wonderful topics of conversation, including this one, which is some food for thought, I should say. Why don't you ask your listeners if they know of anyone who has applied to become a bus driver in the last few years? I wonder if they bothered. I find it a bit coincidental myself that it's only since 2022 that there would appear to have been a massive influx of foreign drivers, healthcare staff, counter staff in petrol stations, counter staff in McDonald's, doing all of those jobs. Do you really believe it's because all of a sudden Irish people just won't do all of these jobs? I think that that is part of it. I really and truly do. I think that there are other jobs out there that people want to do instead that perhaps might pay better money. I think that maybe people are much higher educated now, where they've gone for specific career paths instead. I think that maybe it could be a case could be made that way back in the day, people who were going to college or were, you know, doing a third level education might have got jobs to supplement their income working in a petrol station or working in McDonald's, etc. If it's a career choice for some, I'm fine with that. None of my business. But I think that maybe financially you might be constrained somewhat, I would have thought. Anyway, text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. Aidan, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm good. The whole Trump story and his intervention with Fantino on a number of occasions, Infantino, to reverse the red card, got you thinking of other political interference in the past. Is that right?
Well, yeah, a couple that I just offhand there. I was saying of the Roy Keane, where Bertie Ahern was involved, where the country was split.
Saipan.
Trying to be Saipan, yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
Hold on, I'll give you another one.
Oh, was there one?
That's the Henri one, where he handled the ball. I think Brian Conan, Sarkozy, or whatever, the president that time, had a big row about it. It was all about for a replay.
Did Brian Cowan get in touch with French politicians regarding that handball?
he President Sarkozy had a run-in with him, Dermot Ahern called it an international disgrace or something.
Well, that really is political interference, the Henri handball. The one with Bertie and having the government jet on standby to fly Keane back, that wasn't quite the same political interference, really. Do you think?
I agree. But I'm saying in sport generally, now Robbie Keane there was in for the Celtic job. And there was unrest in the supporters of Celtic that he was the manager of an Israeli team.
Yeah, okay.
So he wasn't even going forward with that. If you see there, Iran were at the World Cup.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they're classed as a terrorist state. So politics are involved right down to the basics, that even when once government are giving money, they have an input. So here, the soccer, the FAI, the whole lot.
Yeah. But does that mean then that if Trump can do it and have a red card reversed because he's got the number of the boss man in FIFA on speed dial, that other countries now should be able to appeal all red cards in matches or World Cups or UEFA Championship, whatever the case may be?
No, it doesn't. But it just means that political interference is in all our sports. And it's either a national thing or an international thing that everyone gets involved because it just gives them an opportunity to get votes. So it's all political. If you look at now, when God Save the Queen was sang up in Crow Park, that was a major thing of 800 years of domination.
did you see that as political or just being respectful to the team that we're playing?
Well, you see, it's not about that. It's about why it was done. It was obviously done to say the war is over, come in peace. So that's fair enough. If that's the mindset of the country, well, you go with that. But I'm just saying that...
The war is over. It certainly is over. Reunification hasn't happened in spite of the war being over. Maybe that's a topic for another conversation another day.
It is, and if you look at that, when Ireland were playing Northern Ireland, you'd go up to a hostile environment. You remember all those games from years gone by? No, yeah. Thank God it's after calming down.
Yeah. No, there's some excellent examples from, you know, I appreciate all of that, I really do. I'm just thinking...
The rugby team have two different sing songs for when you're at a match.
Different sing songs. So, I think the fields of Athenry should be the national anthem for both sides of the border. Really, be much happier then, wouldn't we?
I think before there was a call in on a BBC station, wasn't it? Radio station. They called in what was the most popular song, and I think the fields of Athenry came in. Like obviously people done a number on the station, but in the UK, as I know.
But and having said that, the fields of Athenry is possibly one of the most political songs you could ever sing, to be quite honest.
It is, of course.
When you think of it.
But I mean, if the Irish rugby team, our soccer team, and Sinn Féin of all is saying over there, so the soldier song, sure, that's really a kind of...
Great examples this morning. Appreciate it. Thanks, Aidan. Who are you supporting in the World Cup, incidentally?
Well, England, I'd say.
Yeah. Has that always been the way?
No. I would like to Cape Verde. Now, I would love to see them go forward a bit, but overall, I'm not kind of... I follow soccer, but for someone to win, I don't know, Brazil are gone.
They're gone.
Argentina are still there. It's hard to work out. Neil, I was going to pull you up on one thing there.
Join the queue, pal. Join the queue. There's a long line ahead of you. Go on anyway.
Aren't RT doing a great job in the World Cup? The coverage.
Oh, at 110%. I totally agree.
Maybe that's where they need the money, the extra bobs.
Yeah. No, I flick around a bit just to keep an eye. I love watching Keane. I just love watching Keane on the ITV at halftime. So I move around a bit. But absolutely, they're punching above their weight. But they always did anyway, with regards to commentary and things like that, in fairness to them.
And one last trivia one for you. No, I might be wrong, but Keane got 13 red cards.
Yeah. He was doing his job. He was getting stuck in.
Who got less to them that was unbelievable in that time?
You're talking to the wrong man now about soccer trivia.
I'll give it a name. Vinnie Jones. He got less. 12 red cards.
And he was a hard man, wasn't he?
He was vicious, that guy.
All right, we covered a lot this morning. Loved the conversation. Thanks, Aidan. Text 0868104106. Tina says, we just returned. You talk a lot, Neil, she was saying, about how beautiful our county is. Well, absolutely I do. We returned from beautiful Bantry. We spent 10 wonderful days at the West Cork Chamber Music Festival. The concerts were amazing. We enjoyed Gemma's delicious fresh cakes every day in the marquee. But a special thank you to the mother and daughter team who looked after us so well. They were kind, friendly, incredibly helpful, worked tirelessly between the marquee and beautiful Bantry House, where we had tea, coffee, cakes, wine, Prosecco. I have to tell you that Bantry is such a beautiful town. I highly recommend it. This was our first time. We'll definitely be back next year for the whole Bantry area, Sistine. It is. It's a gloriously beautiful area. And thank you for sharing that. Others share as well of how kind people can be. I was in Koskinny Beach Wednesday evening for a swim. This is last Wednesday. I locked my keys and phone in the car. You can still do that. Lock keys in some cars. I want to thank the local people for being so nice and helpful. They brought me tea, a robe, and even socks. Please thank Paul McMahon, his wife Sinead, and Yvonia, a Polish girl. They all live locally. Lock Doctor came within the hour. It was my first solo trip, and I went and did this. Went for a swim, locked the keys and the phone in the car. Imagine when I got sorted by 10 p.m. I went for a swim because I couldn't leave without doing it, says Eugene down from Galway. So I'm glad that that worked out for you. And then there was one other one, actually, of another person. I'll come back to it over the break. People were talking about people came to their aid and helped, and lovely intervention. Keep them coming. Text 0868104106. Back after the break.
Get on to Prendeville now.
0818104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Weird experience after my night shift in Cork, Neil. While I was waiting for my taxi, a regular car with a Kerry registration pulled up. I was standing a little distance away because it was clearly not a taxi. I noticed the car circling around the area a few times and waiting, then circling again, waiting, circling again. As women, we have to be extra vigilant, so it caught my attention. The driver then rolled down his window and said to me, I'm a taxi, where are you going? I replied, sorry, what? You're not a taxi. He insisted, I am. I said, no taxi regulator license, so you're not. Please, move on. He was an older man, and as he drove off, he again said, I am a taxi, and that it was cash only. I took his registration just in case. When my actual taxi arrived, I mentioned it to the real taxi driver. He thought the man was probably just trying to make some extra cash. But there's absolutely no way I'd get into a random car with someone pretending to be a taxi. It was a very strange experience, and I would tell people, stay safe out there, everyone. Have you ever heard the likes of this in the past? So thank you for that. That was a female who had just finished work, and that was her story. Well, that was a point that I put to Bobby Lynch from the Cork Taxi Council, taxi driver himself. Have you ever heard of that, Bobby?
I have, Neil. That's gone on for years, mate, gone on for years. And, like, the mistake that woman made, that she should have gotten the registration number with that car and reporting it to the girls.
She did get the registration, just in case. But as to what she did with it, she doesn't say. I don't know.
She should go to the PSV officer out in Ballincollig and report it to him. He'll do something about it. The NTA are washing their hands with everything down through the years, as you know.
Okay,
we're sick of reporting this.
Okay, so are you saying that you have heard of people who are using their own private car to go out and make a few extra bucks?
Not alone did I hear of it. I saw it. Every driver in Cork will tell you that. It's going on wholesale. There's no one there to enforce it. The NTA don't do nothing for the taxi industry. When the guards had the taxi industry, when they were looking after the guards, there was none of this carry-on going on because the guards did a very, very good job. But and it's not safe. It's not safe for the people.
Okay. Well, I mean, obviously the advice is don't get into anybody's car. They're not taxis if they don't have all of the proper signage on it. But this is a Kerry registered car. You're saying that this guy came up from Kerry to make some extra cash to Cork City or something?
Well, you see, the danger there is the Freenow and the apps. If you join Freenow, I can actually go to Dublin at the moment, or Limerick anywhere, and pull up on the side of the road and walk the Freenow app.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening here. Fellas are coming in from different counties, always saying, oh, I'm walking the Freenow app. But no, when it gets busy, they pull onto the ranks, when the ranks are moving, and they take fares. And there's no more matching that.
Ah, yeah, is that what that... Do you remember that Limerick taxi driver that was coming in?
He's still around.
But he's not doing anything illegal then?
He's not. But if he pulls up on a taxi rank, right? No, he still pull up on the side of the street, and if a person walks up to him and say, will you take me? Of course he's taking him.
But he shouldn't. No, he should use the app, isn't it? Right, okay.
He's breaking the law there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that this is a way around it. Before, Neil, this was never a law. You couldn't do that. You couldn't go and apply for hire outside of your county.
Okay.
But no, you can, which is very dangerous and very stupid.
It also would be dangerous to get into anybody's car that isn't a taxi, even though they claim to be, to drive you home for cash.
Neil, I told you years ago that when they all come over to the nightclubs and some of them are fairly drunk, they'd hop into a wee bar to get home, mate. And that is the truth, mate. And there's no one watching this going on. Our taxi rank outside Brown Thomas is gone, the nighttime rank. That used to be a marshal rank, and there were security guys on that writing down numbers of taxis that picked up. And I was walking a treat. It was brilliant. And all of a sudden they did away with it. And the reason why they did away with it, because it was walking.
So is that the reason why sometimes, and this happened to me some months back, around about 6:30 of an evening, when I was inside in town and needed to get a taxi, there was no taxis at all on Patrick Street. All of the ranks were empty. I just looked everywhere, and then I went down onto where I'd usually find someone would be, maybe outside the Imperial Hotel.
Yeah,
none.
Yeah.
Is it because they've nowhere to park, so they're just... Or is it they're not working? Which?
Well, the sea fellas are coming into town, and they can't, when it's quiet, they can't get up in the taxi rank.
In this case, I'm just saying, because this is what I experienced, all of the taxi ranks were absolutely empty.
No, the school runs are probably starting that time. Fellas gone off doing their school runs. A lot of fellas then will go home if the traffic in the quays are busy, they head away home. What do you want to be stuck in traffic for?
Yeah.
And the meets are taking away up and you're getting the height of abuse.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're giving a good service, and we want to make it better, and we want to make it safe for the public. But our local politicians, a lot of them, do not help us. Don't care one bit about us. The vote was taken in City Hall to do away with the taxi ranks and what have you. And out of the 31 councillors, there was only 4 councillors voted to keep all the ranks. All the rest didn't care one bit about the taxis. Mm. And there's city councils in there that don't care one bit about Cork City. They tell you that Cork City is lovely, which it is lovely, but they want to start waking up and looking after it.
So in the case... No, listen, I appreciate what you're passionate about it, but in the case of your man who's got a regular motor car and doesn't have any taxi licence whatsoever, if she reported that to one Garda Síochána, would they chase him down and fine him or prosecute him?
Look, the girls are the people to get on to.
Okay.
So you're wasting your time phoning a taxi company. You're wasting your time phoning Freenow. You're wasting your time definitely phoning the NTA. The girl on Melancholy, Colin McDonough, he's the man in charge of the taxis.
Okay, that's good advice.
He's the PSV officer. And he's the man that's dealing with a lot of problems, and he's doing his very, very best. He's overran, but he's still doing it. He's in contact with me all the time, and he's a great help to us. But the NTA, Neil, I was off the road. I changed my car, and I was 5 weeks off the road. 5 weeks out of changing the car. No, no other job or profession have that.
Because they were so slow with the paperwork, yeah.
Well, I had to change two back windows, a brand new car I bought, and I had to change two back windows because they were tilted glass.
Mm.
So they were made that way. But yes, a limousine can have any glass you want, dark, whatever. But like my question to them. When I questioned this, they said, oh, the girls have to look into your car, see who you're carrying. No, do limousines carry any criminals or anything like that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, what do I know? I mean, I want taxis that you can look in and out of, you know, I mean, proper
yeah,
pass.
Well, I'll agree with that, but I shouldn't have been 5 weeks out of work.
No, it should have happened much faster, much more efficiently. Yeah.
So this
is different to Uber, lads. Katrina says somebody just picking somebody up like that in their own car, is that not Uber? No, it's not as like Uber, because Uber, you would have already made the booking.
You'd have it on your phone.
You'd have it on your phone, and you'd know the reg of the car. Yeah, I just wouldn't want anybody, but particularly, say, maybe a young girl going home after a night out, getting into a stranger's car.
Yeah. It's after happening. It's after happening down 2 years and there's nothing done about it. And I will tell any girl or anyone that if a bogus taxi do come up to them, take the reg and report them straight away to the guard.
All right. Thanks, Bobby. As always, appreciate it. Bobby Lynch, a taxi driver with the Cork Taxi Council. Text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. Gillian says, my dad collapsed at the number 7 bus stop in Dillon's Cross on Friday at 1:30. Collapsed. He fell forward, hit his head hard on the concrete. A passing cyclist stopped to help him, but he was drifting in and out of consciousness and remembers nothing else. Another kind lady called my brother, who headed to Dillon's Cross, but the ambulance had already arrived and dad had been rushed to hospital. He's in bad shape, but we'd love to thank both of the people for their kindness. There are still some really good people in the world. If they're listening, maybe they might get in touch with you, because I would love to thank them personally, says Gillian and their family. And we're thinking about you and your dad and hoping that he makes a full recovery after that fall in Dillon's Cross on Friday. But well done to those people who did get involved and intervened. If they're listening, would you please get in touch? Because Gillian would like to thank you personally for your intervention, the cyclist and indeed the other kind lady. Then, of course, Melissa, who was obviously out and about going for a walk on a beautiful summer's day, and she sent me this picture. She says, I am walking by the Lee Fields alone. I see a person living here. I'm not sure if it's safe for me to approach. Has anyone any info on who's living here and do they need help? Says Melissa. It doesn't surprise me, because from Fitzgerald's Park all the way out long, unfortunately, you will see people living in tents. And the photograph that you sent me is somebody's possessions, their worldly possessions, up by the Lee Fields, up against a tree. And that's where they call home. It's very sad. Everybody has a life story. And whoever that person is, they have a story to tell. I see that all of the time. Here's one of the more interesting ones that I see for a number of years now, is a woman who's living under the flyover in Douglas Village. You know, the massive flyover goes over the village there. It's got some buttresses to the right and left, and they're kind of like little, they're little kind of, you know, dark areas under the flyover on kind of high platforms. And there's a young woman who's been living under that flyover for months against now. She was there last year, and I think she was there the year before, and she's back again there living under the flyover. Who would have thought in 2026 you'd have a young person, reasonably young woman, living under the flyover? We tried on an occasion in the past to contact her to see if everything was okay, but she kind of just wanted to be left alone. So we haven't gone back since then. But there she is, and she's got shopping trolleys full of a lot of her worldly possessions. She's got Skippo bags covering a lot of the things that she owns, loads and loads of plastic bags and suitcases and boxes. And people drop off food to her regularly. But from the point of view of intervention or help, I mean, I'm not there all of the time, so I don't know if guards have visited or a squad car has pulled up to see if she's okay or needs any help. Perhaps they have done. I don't know if social services called to see if this young woman wants any help, or whether she just wants to be left alone. But I think we'd all agree that this is not a place for anybody to live. I mean, there are some issues with regards to litter, but that's just kind of a by the way. Nobody should be living under the flyover. I don't think anybody should even be permitted to. There should be some kind of a help to make life better for them. But that's the world we're living in. Back after the break, text 0868104. Actually, I'll stay with calls if you don't mind. Come back to the breaks in a few minutes' time because Rory's standing by. But first up, Morris. Some of the madder jobs that people had back in the day include your one. What was the title?
Well, mine wasn't a mad job at all. It was just a hard job.
No, but a bed factory boy. I was a bed factory boy on Shannon Street. Would sound to me as if you were a 16-year-old testing beds.
Look, I tried it a few times. You wouldn't have been allowed. No, there was an old bed factory at the top there, right at the top of Shannon Street, Jackson.
That's right.
In the furniture trade, like he'd known them, yeah, and Emer's dad as well was in the game, you know. But it was like I was listening to the chap yesterday. He was on about the coffin factory, and it brought it all back to me. Like, and I'm talking 30 odd years ago now. Like, this was like a collection of different sheds, like that had grown into kind of like industrial units. The head man there was Paddy Jackson, and he built it up. Now, his gentleman, a lovely, lovely man, right? And his sons, then were involved, and there was daughters there as well. And they had a shop below in the North Main Street, opposite the South Main Street. It's along there somewhere anyway. It is well gone now. But a lovely group of people, you know? But hard work. I went in there, I was 16. I was an early school leaver, Neil, and I went.
What education did you get?
Education-wise, I got a junior cert out of Fad Rocks.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
And I got third levels later on, Neil, right? But, like, the reality, I'm talking about this now, right? Actually, and I'll explain this now. I went into Outreach, and then I ended up in Fad Rocks. And then they set me up there, told me to go up there for work experience kind of thing.
That would have been Father Matthew
1994.
Street.
Well, sorry? Off the soap mile there, yeah.
Because I use that as a shortcut a lot of the time, walking in and out, and I do see a lot of teens, lots of them.
Is it still there, Neil?
Yeah, they're still in the area and they're still going in and out there. Yeah, bunches of them, yeah. Why would one go to Fad Rocks?
Well, honestly, no, Neil, I'm going to be 100% honest. Poverty, Neil. I grew up in poverty in the north side, right? And if you were going to Outreach or something like that, you got like 25 quid a week, okay, into your pocket. When you had nothing, that was better than nothing, right?
As in there was nothing at home, is it?
There was nothing at home. Like, my mother died when I was 8, Neil, right?
Yeah.
There was 5 children in the family, and my dad was fond of drink, right? So we basically had nothing growing up. We more or less raised ourselves from a certain age, right?
Okay, so did your dad work?
No. He used to work in the paint factory there in the Commons Road, and I don't know, he was fired over sometime in the 80s. And back then there was no jobs. Plus the mother got sick then in the mid 80s, and she died then in 86. So
how many brothers and sisters?
Three sisters and one brother. So there was 5 of us there, you know.
And was there any intervention if you had a dad who wasn't providing? Yeah, anybody?
Nothing. It's horrendous. When I look back at it now, I think, you know, like with the Tussle things you'll be hearing about now, like we'd have been Red Alert family back then, but there was, like, we weren't alone. Like there was other families with drink problems going on, like, you know. And
so anything that he got, which should have been probably dole or welfare, he drank it.
The pub, yeah.
But what about food?
He was grand when he had nothing. When he had nothing, right, he was fine. But when he'd get money, like he'd get an odd job down painting a house or something like that, off to the pub then and drink what he'd earned, do you know, that kind of way.
Was he ever regretful or emotional? Or
he was an alcoholic to the day he died, Neil.
But did he ever have any guilt regarding the rearing of the children?
Well, it was never expressed to me, like.
And what did you do for food then, or clothing or
food
footwear?
Food was fine, there would always be food there. Right, and clothing was okay. We had an aunt lived over the road and she'd drop off a few bits and pieces, like, you know, they were okay that way, but you know, there was no support, like, to get you right in life or anything like that. But I digress there now, and I know you're interested in it, and the people are probably interested in this story, but I was ringing up about the job. I wanted to tell you about a young lad who went in the door, 16 years of age. He was told down at Fad Rocks, go up to this crowd here, Cathedral Bedding, they'll give you work experience. And I went up there at 16 years of age, and I walked in the door, and I had to talk to the fellow. I know he was rattling, Neil, right? I didn't know what, you know, as a young person would like. And I just spoke to him, and then I said, yeah, come in Monday, we give it a shot. No, Neil, it was hard, hard work, right? But I look back at it now, and I just think it kind of was character building. There was a great bunch of lads down there from the north side. There was one or two lads had been in prison. That was the kind of place, like, you got a chance down in Jackson's. If you walked, you'd be kept.
That. I think that's great.
If you walked, you'd be kept. If you were a lazy feck, like, you were out the door. Do you know that kind of way?
Yeah, right? Yeah,
no,
yeah. We give you the chance, but you got to earn it. Yeah, I know what you mean.
You got to earn it, and you walk away. It was a weird kind of a place, Neil. It was over three levels. Like, you went down steps to each floor, right? And the very first day I went in, they brought me down to this big machine, right? And there was, do you know what it was? No, it was shredding. It was shredding cloth back into fibres, you know, waste cut off from the sunbeam now and things
right?
And old rags, do you know, like the cash for clothes stuff now that's been collected here, I reckon that's going off somewhere else now for the same thing to happen, but it was happening in Cork 30 odd years ago,
yeah,
do you know?
Yeah.
And it was being ripped up, and if you ever ripped open a mattress, Neil, and you've seen this kind of black thready kind of stuff, all different threads inside in it, That's what the machine was making. It was a flock, like a blanket, right?
Yeah.
And you were down there then with another man, and there was this machine, and I'll never forget the name on this machine. It was a massive thing altogether, right? Ulrich Kohlhoffel was the name on the machine. From 1938, right, was stamped onto that, right? A big brass plate on it, right? Some part of Germany it came out of. And this thing was like something from the Dark Ages, big, massive motors driving it and belts onto it and things rattling and banging and it was blowing fluff everywhere, right? And you'd come out of it then, like a fella after being out in the snow, they'd be white all over you and be coughing up. Listen, great days. You'd be down there rolling the flock then, and then you'd be up then bagging mattresses and humping them out and loading lorries and going out on deliveries. And
did you love it?
Oh, well, There was times now we had, you know, we'd have the old arguments and things like that, like, but there was great camaraderie there. There was great lads there. The money wasn't great, I'd say that much, right? But the family themselves were very decent. Like, Christmas time would come around, there'd be a bonus. There'd be a party as well, you know? The mother, like Paddy's wife, would come up the odd time to the factory, Mrs. Harrington, or Mrs. Jackson, but her maiden name is Harrington. She's an Northside originally. And she'd come up to the factory for a visit. Like, Paddy was kind of retired at this time, no, like, but he was still having around. And I'd be sent for on the intercom because they was young fella, you know. Go down to Bunty's and get the cakes, right? They might be handed out a fiver. This is 30 odd years ago when a fiver stood for something, you know. Yeah, fivers worth the cakes.
Yeah.
You go down to Bunty's and I think there was three cream cakes. You know, the old milk cakes now that you'd be giving out there every Monday.
Yeah.
Like, you buy a box of them now for €8, right? And there'd be about six or seven of them inside it, right? But back then, you could get three of them for €1, or for £1, sorry, down in Bunty's in Shannon Street. So I go down and get a big tray of cakes of fivers worth.
Any old bit of Chester now?
Oh, you could get the Chester if you want, but see, when Mrs. Jackson was coming, it was the fresh green cakes you got,
right?
You got a few apple slices and things like that. But you'd have one coming up the road then for yourself, do you know? And say not, and you go in them to the office and you'd hand them over. There was a lovely girl working in the office, Sandra, and there's the cakes and I'd take one for yourself. Sure, you got two then, you see, do you know what I mean?
And did that time set you up for life then? Gave you a great start?
Did you know what? No. My sister died in 97. She was killed in a car accident, or a motorcycle accident, right? And that kind of sickened me towards working things for a couple of years. Like, it just, my mental health wasn't in the right position, you know?
Oh, so but, sorry.
I look back in that and I do think, Neil, that it kind of saved me going in there. I was on the kind of, a slippery slope as a young lad.
Oh, listen, absolutely. There's a fork in the road there at that age.
And I look back in that and saying, you know, like the two or three years that I was down there doing this and doing that and rolling the big rolls of springs up the lane early in the morning and, you know, dragging the fluffy stuff off the lorry in. I was saying, like, I was doing that, so I couldn't be doing other things. Like, it was a great diversion,
I'm amazed, you know, I'm impressed how you rationalise that, you know, now, or maybe even back then you realise, you know, I've got to make this work. I haven't had the best start. Do you mind me asking, whatever became of your dad?
Suicide. 63 years of age, yeah. He wasn't well for most of his life, Neil, mental health-wise, right? And the alcohol sort of escapism, self-medication, call it what you want, right? He wasn't without tragedy himself. Like, I mean, he buried his wife. He grew up.
I'm fierce. I can look past the alcoholic.
I
see the man behind that, and I'm sure I'm sure among other things he must have been full of regrets and rattled with guilt.
Yeah, well, people talk about him. Your dad was a lovely fella, like, you know, and I just agree with him, like, but like he was lovely out in the street, but when he came home he wasn't nice at all. Do you know that kind of way?
Yeah. Okay. And yeah.
That's the truth of the situation. But that's where he ended up. It's unfortunate, really,
tragic,
like, you know. But,
tragic.
Yeah, and he came from a good enough family, decent family, and they were up in Roach's buildings. I was actually delighted you had a chap on from Goldsmiths Avenue there last year. You were doing the thing about the wallpaper in the Imperial, remember? And you were the chap on from that area, and it was like, it was brilliant listening to him because it was bringing a lot of memories back to me from up that way. You know, I just spent a lot of time up there as a younger child, you know.
I'm glad. I'm glad to put a smile. Yeah. Just put smiles on people's faces.
Look, I've good memories of Jackson's, and I do think that it was at a crucial time in life. It provided a distraction that kind of saved me from going the wrong way.
You know, absolutely.
Good to say that, like, you know.
Yeah, you know, we think of young children like that who, unfortunately, sadly, for all the wrong reasons, have perhaps in your case, a father who would be a street angel but a house devil. But listen, you've been a great contributor.
Rockies, before I go, Rockies was good as well, Neil, because Rockies gave you an eye opener. You know, this is real life now.
Father Rocks was the job. I remember Mossy. I got my junior cert there as well, says Sean. I don't know if you recall Sean, but he knew you. He said, a fellow called John said, you asked about Father Rocks. If you were thrown out of school, you'd end up going to Father Rocks, says John. That wasn't in your case, Morris. I'm not saying that. I love listening to Mossy when he rings in. We were great friends back in the day when all these things happened in his life. He's just a great guy, says Christine. Does that mean name mean anything?
Oh. It does, actually, yeah. It could be the Garland railway station. Yeah, go on.
There you go. Well, listen, do stay in touch. Lovely. Great chatting with you.
Yeah. Listen, Neil, thanks, bye. God bless, bye.
Take care. I tell you something. I know you love your city and your county. We have some fabulous tourist attraction family passes to give away right across the summer. I'd love to sort you out with one of them. Maybe take yourself off with a bunch of family or friends to one of the great tourist attractions around the county. Are you interested in that?
Is this me you're asking? You're saying this to you, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. Morris. Yeah.
Have you ever done the bus tour? I haven't. Can you get me tickets for it?
I think it's a great thing that everybody on Lee's side should do, the Cork City bus tour. Absolutely. Okay. We've got some wonderful Blarney. Did you ever go out and kiss the Blarney Stone?
I didn't, Neil.
My God, man.
Do you know what? No, I've been around a lot of places, Neil, but I never seem to do the home things, you know?
The world of Corkness awaits you, my friend. I'm going to put you back on hold. You can pick out something nice for yourself and the family, all right?
Okay, good man. Thanks.
We'll sort you out with a few more, because you've been talking to us on the air for a number of times. Well, I'm on the topic, actually. We've got all sorts of different locations for you. So we've got Ballyhass Lakes, Foot Golf in Belgooley, Monkey Maze, Cork City Bus Tour, Cork Harbour Boat Hire, West Cork Model Railway Village, Blarney Castle, the Farm in Granow, West Cork Secret Activity Centre, the Lagoon Activity Centre, I think that might be in Roscarbury, Clonakilty Adventure Centre, Mitchelstown Caves, Cape Clear Ferries, Fastnet Tour, Dersey Cable Car, Titanic Experience in Cove, Cork City Jail, here in the city, up around Strawberry Hill, Spike Island, Camden Fort Mar, Michael Collins House, the All Clock Gate Tarrant Collegiate, Skibbereen Heritage Centre, Cove Heritage Centre and Kinsale Museum. And that's just for starters, ladies and gentlemen. Back after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation. So Magella got back to me and she said, just wanted to let you know that the NTA upheld my appeal against APCOA and I've been refunded the full amount of €125. I've received notification from APCOA that they're processing the refund, so I'll have it by the end of the week. Thanks be to God, the NTA showed some common sense in this matter. I'm delighted to hear that, Magella, and I'm glad you went all of the way, because originally you told the story on the air of the St. Patrick's Woolen Mills in Douglas. She parked up and she paid via the PayConnect online and used the QR code, right? Did all of the things you're supposed to do. So she was engaging with it and doing it what she thought was correctly, but she put a wrong digit in from the registration of her car. That can happen. It was raining heavily. Same day. She didn't notice the error. Came back and she was clamped. So the clamper released it. Was releasing the clamp on another car. And I asked them, why was I clamped? Because they said, you didn't pay on display. She said, I did. And it was there up on the dash and everything, but of course it's a wrong digit. It was genuine, a genuine mistake. He said he'd release the clamp if I paid him €125 and appeal it. So I did that and had the appeal denied. So she appealed that appeal to the NTA, the National Transport Authority, after APCOA refused the appeal. Because there was genuine human error. It's totally our mistake, but, you know, common sense should prevail. Anyway, the NTA ruled in her favour, and the NTA told APCOA to give her her money back, and APCOA are now processing the refund of €125. And I say to you, well done, Magella. I'm absolutely delighted that that worked out for you. And that's great news indeed. Now, others talking then. Remember, I just mentioned in passing late checkouts. You're probably noticing it. Yes, indeed. Heard you talking about the late checkout and the early check. The late check-in and the early checkout, lads. That's what's happening more and more. My daughter was up in Dublin last week for Calvin Harris and stayed in a hotel in Clondalkin. Would you believe she had to pay an extra €15 for an early check-in? It's become a pure money racket. Can't come on, but I'll let you know. And thank you to Pat as well. Maybe a little bit of confusion earlier on with Alfie. I don't know. But he says the OK Corral is in Tombstone in the state of Arizona. Dodge City is in Kansas, says Pat. So as they said in the film, Tombstone is a long way from Kansas. It's in the state of Arizona. But even the sound of the town, Tombstone, sounds absolutely wonderful. So keep them coming. Text 0868 104 106. Just wondering when you said about the early morning pubs, who went into them in the morning? Or was it before work or what? I never knew they were there, says Marie and Clon. And you did say they were all jointed. And where did they get the money? P.S. I was hoping Ryan Tuberty would come back to do the Late Late Show. I just think he's great. Well, you never know. It's the kind of door half ajar for Ryan Tuberty. I don't know. But yeah, there was loads and loads of early morning pubs. If Jim McKeown were alive now, and you know, there isn't a year goes by or a month goes by that something on the air, I think of fondly of Jim McKeown, and I say if Jim McKeown was around, or if Sean Beecher was around, or things like that, all of the other greats. I could get somebody on actually, and maybe talk about, you know, Ronnie O'Hurley. He is gone. He's another guy that I would have reached out to straight away on topics like this. But there are others, and there's some fine historians I can get on the air if people are interested to hear about the early morning pubs on Leaside. To answer your question, Marie, would take me a good 10 or 15 minutes. There were lots of different reasons why people visited early morning pubs. But if you're interested, lads, text me and we will return to the topic. Text 0868 104 106. Right now, though, we'll pick up the conversation after 11. But do get involved. Text 0868 104 106. And you can always pick up the phone. Why not? 0818 104 106 and jump on air.
Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation. The Neil Prendeville Show with Elevate Credit Union. Text 0868 104 106. We were chatting earlier on about red cards and Roy Keane and Vinnie Jones. Vinnie Jones wasn't vicious when he was in Cork for his stag party. He got turned away from a few clubs. When he arrived at the Pav at 1:30 in the morning, the doorman said, "Sorry, we're closed." Vinnie said, "I'm Vinnie Jones." And the doorman said, "Listen, at 1:30 in the morning, it doesn't matter if you're Tom Jones," says Chris by text. I didn't know that Vinnie Jones actually had his stag here on Leaside. You ask about people living in tents. An interesting one from somebody who said, upon leaving prison, buying a tent is the norm. You can't get a rental as a felon. And unfortunately, some people all too often have to resort to getting a tent, sometimes provided by the homeless services, incidentally, and living in a tent while leaving jail. That was because Melissa got in touch, sending me a photograph of somebody who was literally doing that. But none of that surprises us anymore, to be quite honest with you. Somebody sent me a photograph at the weekend to the show, and it's a photograph of a long, 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 long queue. I mean, really long, all the way down the Grand Parade. There must be easily 150, 200, maybe 250 people in the queue. Texter says, can someone please explain to me what's happening here? I hear it's a food for the homeless queue. If that's the case, they were the best dressed homeless people I've ever seen, along with 99% of them being foreigners. Now, some might say that that is an over-the-top comment to make and that it could be deemed as being racist or unfair or unkind. But I tell you something, it's one hell of a long, long queue of people. All sorts of different nationalities, all queuing up in a long line for clearly what is one of the homeless hubs, what we used to call the soup runs before, except they do an awful lot more than soup anymore. They do food, and they do food to go, and they do hot meals, and they do clothing and footwear and medicine and toiletries and all sorts of things. And there's more and more pressure now on people. And unfortunately, a lot of the time it's people who decide to come to Ireland for a better life. And if they can't support themselves, they then have to turn to the help of the state or indeed to homeless organisations. I mean, you see penny dinners now are feeding more and more people of immigrant nationalities who are coming to live here in Cork. And unfortunately and sadly, a lot of the time they're English language school students who haven't any money left to buy food. Or they could be those that are working as delivery drivers or Deliveroo drivers and what have you. And unfortunately have to turn to the likes of penny dinners and the homeless shelters or the homeless volunteers to feed and to clothe them. They're the times we're living in. Text 0868 104 106. I'm always open to correction and Laura is spot on. She says, no. Kelleher's buildings are near Gardner's Hill. You were referencing where Frank O'Connor lived. That was Harrington's Square off Ballyhooly Road, says Laura. I'm sure of that. Thank you. You are right. It's important to get things right. I confused the two of them. And I'm happy to correct it on your behalf. Actually, talking about trying to clear things up, a little bit of confusion. It was a lovely text came in yesterday. I don't have it handy now, but it was talking about a small little tiny sweet shop on Drawbridge Street. Years and years ago, there was all sorts of different little shops and little businesses on Drawbridge Street. Drawbridge Street is still doing well. They got a lot of different shops there. Unfortunately, a lot of vacant buildings also. Back in the day, it would have been just all sorts of small little tiny. So this was a small sweet shop. And somebody wanted to know what was the soft drink that they served in there. They thought it was called Little Nora. Well, who wouldn't know if somebody who's in the brewing business, well, more like alcoholic beverages being brewed at the Franciscan, well, but Shane Long may be able to shed some light on this. Shane, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
All right. So can you solve this mystery for us, I wonder?
I can, absolutely. Little Nora's was bottled on the Normal site. It was under the license for DC's product at the time. We're trying to dig out. We have a tray somewhere. One of my guys is looking for it now, and we'll send you on the picture of us when we have it.
What did it? Sorry, I'm getting some interference there on the line. I don't know why that is, but have you got a radio on there in the background or anything? No,
I'm on the train. Sorry.
Oh, don't worry about it. You're on the train. I get it. So people are talking on their phone. So what did it? What did it look like? What did it taste like?
It was very similar to Tanora, apparently. It was the little sister of Tanora.
So Little Nora was Tanora's small sister?
Yes.
And was Tanora a DC's drink as well?
It was indeed, yeah. Which is now owned by Coca-Cola.
And what did Little Nora taste like, if we know what Tanora tasted like?
Apparently that had tangerine in it as well.
And it's gone now, is it, clearly?
Oh, it's gone, yeah, it's gone. I'd say we probably have the only evidence of it in the country. As soon as I get it, I will send it on to you.
Okay. And just a little fun fact before I let you get on with your train journey. You also said that Dinny from Glen Row was a bottle washer. What's that about?
in the Everyman and places like that.
Joe Lynch we're talking about, of course.
Yeah. During the day, he was the bottle washer on the Normal site, so he would have bottled Little Nora's back in the day.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
How's biz, though, Shane? Good?
It's incredible. It's the best year ever. It's absolutely incredible. Yeah. Seven nights a week, thankfully.
Yeah. So the pub is flying?
Flying. Absolutely flying.
Yeah.
The brewery is maxed out. We can't brew anymore. I was actually talking to Frank Bradley in the roundy just before you rang, telling him I can only give him one keg this week.
You need to scale up, man.
No, I never do that again.
Oh, well, listen, yeah. I suppose, you know, you've cut your cloth and you know what works, stick with it.
Yeah.
No, it's just, I was thinking of you, actually, because I was over at Diddley Squat. Have you travelled over at all to the Cotswolds?
Yes.
Okay. Have you had the Hawkstone beer and the pale ale and all the lagers?
I have.
What do you think?
He's an amazing character.
Did you go to the brewery?
No, I haven't been to the brewery, no.
Okay.
No, but I have tasted all his beers. He's the ultimate PR person.
I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that he's just very likable.
Yes, Absolutely.
You know, and people flock to nice people. But anyway, he bought this small brewery in Chipping Norton. Do you know the story behind it?
I do. We're actually using the same distributor. I have a business in Dublin. We're using the same distributor in the UK as he does. And their sales went from, I think it was 10 or 20,000 a year to a couple of million.
So on that basis, he's got to build a huge, big new brewery next to the old existing one because he can't keep up with demand.
I actually think he's not building it big enough with the traction that he's getting over there.
It's insane. It's insane. Yeah. And people who are going into the restaurant and bar then are robbing 400 pint glasses a week.
I'd believe it. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm glad that things are thriving for you, Shane. You've put the effort in and the hard work. Continued success.
Much appreciated.
People rob anything from the Franciscan well?
Everything. Absolutely everything. So I would have had, in the ladies' toilet, this is going back many, many years ago, we had the Good Housewife magazine. I don't know if you ever came across that. It was a 1950s.
Oh, yeah. I had a weekly subscription.
So we put them in and they were robbed. And then we changed the screws that you'd have to have a particular type of fitting to take it off. And then I came in one day and they'd been taken off the wall and everything taken out of them and put back up again.
Oh, empty. you mean there was it was good housekeeping on the wall framed?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So they took them off the wall. So they'd have to take them off to get at it at the back. And not only did they take them, they put them back up again with an empty frame.
Do you remember the guy? Do you remember the guy who robbed the glass? Do you remember that?
Oh yes.
Did he send it back to you with a tenner or something?
He sent it back with the money for the glass and sorry for the inconvenience. It was a French guy. Yeah,
he couldn't sleep at night with the guilt, I suppose.
But it went on for years. The poor guy's having sleep at night.
Listen, continued success. A great place to be in Franciscan Well. Have a safe trip. And thanks for solving the conundrum regarding Little Nora. We now know that Little Nora was Tanora's small sister. Fair play, Shane.
And I'll send on the image when we get it.
You wouldn't send on a bottle, would you?
There's no bottle.
Brew it again. Why don't you brew it? I don't know whether you brew soft drinks.
We did a Tanora a couple of years ago. A Tanora beer.
That's right.
It had alcohol in it. We've never done a Little Nora. So maybe I will after this call.
So a buddy of mine, Kevin Down in Yall, sent me a screen grab at the weekend. And he had a can of Heineken and a bottle of Tanora. And he was having a Tanora Heineken Shandy. He said it was the nicest thing he has ever drank.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Continued success. Take care. Cheers.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Cheers. That's Shane Long at the Franciscan Well. Check it out. Last time I checked, they do really great food and super pizzas as well as everything else. Text 0868 104 106 after the break.
Get on to Prendeville now.
0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Okay, whoever worked in Thompson's came back to me and said there were three, maybe four of us in our teens in Thompson's. It only lasted about 2 weeks. I was also a messenger boy. I often delivered two loin chops to places on the college road. If there wasn't an answer to the knock, I threw the chops through the letterbox. If they had a dog, too bad. Imagine that. Messenger boys would deliver small little thing, little packages as small as two loin chops out to the college road from the English market. I think if you're talking about the fact that you were one of three or four teens that were in Thompson's at the time, you possibly are the texter who was sticking the peas and the beans and the stick and the rag and the ring into the barn racks in Thompson's. An amazing part-time job as a teenager. Other people doing jobs are overworked, incidentally. I worked with a tradesman one time. After doing 10 hours a day on site, used to go home every day after work, have his tea and drive his own taxi for hours. It was very dangerous. But I knew the guy. He was tight out and just hungry for money. My God, the things people will do. It's no joke being a bus driver in this heat. None of the city buses have aircon. They have this small window, but many of those don't work or open. They have fans, but they're only blowing about hot air. The bus drivers' backs are covered in sweat when they stand up. It's very uncomfortable. If you let management know buses have defects, you're reprimanded. Many of them have defects, Cork buses. Management gave drivers a bottle of water, but by the time it was given out to them, it was lukewarm. As a bus driver, I can tell you, not great working conditions, it has to be said. I got another response, actually, from CityLink, talking about the issues involving the Dublin-Cork leg of that bus journey and the driver with passengers saying he was falling asleep. So I will update you on that one. And actually, to be honest with you, loads and loads of different texts and emails on that topic of conversation. But I will talk to Paul in 1 second. But can I just say, I got a lengthy email, parts of which I've highlighted and paraphrased from Brian, because the state of the Cork buses are a disgrace when you compare Cork to the likes of Dublin, Limerick and Galway. He says Limerick is now fully electric. So they cascaded all their older double-decker buses down to Cork. Limerick is now fully electric. He says we still have numerous 2008 and up to 2012 buses being used. And he says Galway will be the next to be fully electrified as buses. They already have 5 fully electric plug-in buses in operation in Galway. And their current fleet has plug-in hybrids. We have none. He says that with regards to hiring, Capwell host recruitment evenings every month. If they're satisfied with people who show up, and you have to have 2-year driving license, pass the theory test for buses, they start the recruitment process, and that involves a driving assessment. They do a 30-minute assessment, driving around many roads, motorways and roundabouts. And then they have to do an English assessment. This is how they hire people. I'm going to attend one of them soon so I can let you know how easy or challenging it is for applicants. Please do, Brian. Please go through the recruitment process for me, will you? And come back and you can discuss it and let us know exactly how that went. I'll be waiting to hear from you. For all other business, pick up the phone 0818 104 106. Paul, good morning.
Hi, Neil. How are you doing?
I'm good. Now, your text says, as an ex-police officer, I drove public service vehicles for 3 years. You mentioned that because you're saying you clearly know how to drive, yeah?
Yeah. I was a police officer for 10 years. And during that time, obviously, went on numerous advanced driving courses, speed driving, you name it, we did it. Mm-hmm. And then after I left, a while after that, I joined a local firm called Go North East Buses and became a public service vehicle driver.
Okay. Well, could you mind me asking, I mean, maybe you might find this in me being inquisitive or whatever, but why would you decide to flip careers like that?
It wasn't immediately one after the other. I spent some time across in Tenerife and what have you as a scuba diving instructor for several years. So I've had a bit of an adventurous life, shall we say.
Okay. That sounds an interesting career path, to be quite honest. So let's deal with a particular coach journey from Dublin Airport to Cork.
Yeah. Right, it was a couple of months ago. I can't remember the exact dates because I'm away from the studio, so I haven't got the paperwork in front of me. But a couple of months ago, came across to flew into Dublin from Newcastle, where I live, and got one of the standard coach buses down to Cork to visit a very good friend of mine, Mary and Ring Skiddy. And I can only describe the journey as an absolute terrifying journey from hell. The way that it started was that when the coach pulled into the airport terminal and we got on, it was raining. It was really adverse weather conditions. And the windows in the coach were steamed up, particularly the windscreen. And the driver... who I don't know if I'm allowed to say it, but he was of sort of Eastern European origin. Got a bottle of water.
Is that relevant?
It could be. Okay. It could be because if it crops up in other complaints, it could point to the same driver with a pattern. I don't know. Anyway.
Okay. He was. No. It's just I know an awful lot of people from Eastern Europe, all sorts of different countries. And they're all working here, and they're lovely people and rearing families and holding down good jobs.
The same thing over here. Yeah. Having lived in London for several years, so
lovely
I'm well versed. They absolutely are. They absolutely are. Anyway, he got a bottle of water and started throwing water on the inside of the windscreen, and he had. And this is before the bus pulled off.
He had a big, what you call a blue roll of paper. And he wiped the windscreen down with that.
Did he ever, did he not try and clear it with the fans? Like, that's what they're provided for.
He knew that, that they weren't working. And as a former bus driver, I know that if there's a defect on a bus like that, it should be withdrawn from service immediately.
So the fans weren't working?
Nope. And I pointed that out to him and I said, are you sure you should be driving this bus with that defect? Because it is a serious defect. He just says, oh, yeah, yeah, no problem, no problem. Anyway, we got on the coach and off we went. And naturally, coming along the banks of the Liffey on the way out of Dublin, weather conditions were really bad. The windscreen started misting up again, so he couldn't see very well in front. He kept on leaning forward and with the back of his hand wiping the windscreen.
Madness.
So he could see his bit. Yeah, it was. And plus the fact you've got the oncoming vehicles and you've got the glare of the headlights, which intensify the problem. Anyway, I was on the phone to my partner. I said, I'm on the coach, and this driver is driving it like he stole it, so I think we might get there ahead of time. What I didn't know was he was going to take an alternative route. The journey should have taken about 3.5 hours, and eventually it was 5.5. He took an alternative route because he said there was some problem on the prescribed routes anyway. So we're going along.
It's a straight run, it's a motorway all the way.
Yeah, but coming out of Dublin, it's not motorway. Okay. It's several lanes in each direction, and it's subject to city speed limits.
Okay.
So I'm sitting in the front seat next to the driver. So I've got an unobstructed clear view of him and the route ahead. The speeds that he was going along there and cutting from one lane to another, I thought, were dangerous. And I said to him, would you mind slowing down, mate? Because there's a few people sitting here that are extremely nervous. So he tended to, and this went on. We went out, I'm not that familiar with the roads, but as we left Dublin, you go underneath the tunnel and come out the other side. The windscreen was still misting up again, and he was still trying to wipe it down. Anyhow, as you go on a bit further,
you should not have been driving that bus. That bus should not have been.
You wait until you hear the rest of it, Neil. Honestly, there was one of the passengers sitting behind me, come running down the aisle, and he went and grabbed the hold of the blue roll while the bus was still in motion, and he was actually wiping the mist off the windscreen as we were going along. That in itself was, panic signal, shall we say. There was people on the bus still saying, why doesn't he just stop? Why doesn't he ring in and get a new bus? You know, that sort of thing. And the guy just carried on. Anyway, that little episode continued. His speeds were ridiculous because of the weather conditions. And I'm not just talking about in Dublin here. I'm on about when we were out of the city limits. I don't know the route that he took, but eventually we were on the, I think it was the N74 out towards a place called Clonmel. Excuse my ignorance, but I don't know the area very well at all. Anyway, on route, what he was doing was reaching into his lunch bag, we call it a bait bag over here, grabbing a couple of apples, eating them. His eyes weren't on the road. He was swerving around. And I was saying to him, mate, you need to slow down and get both hands on the wheel because you're all over the blooming road. He corrected himself and we carried on. After that, we got onto a dual carriageway situation. And you had a big raised embankment on the left-hand side, on the near side. Yeah. He was reaching for his bottle of water, and what he was doing was he was trying to control the steering wheel with his knees, with both hands off the steering wheel, all right, looking down to his right-hand side to get his bag of his bottle of water.
And driving with his knees.
He was driving with his knees, mate. I kid you not. You couldn't make this one up. He very violently swerved across the left side onto the hard shoulder and very nearly clipped the raised embankment. And I screamed at him at that point, all right? I won't use the expletives I shouted to him, but you can imagine.
Yeah.
Basically, it was a case of, mate, get your hands on the wheel and regain control of this bus because you're endangering the lives of all of your passengers. So he did for a few hundred yards and then did it again and again. Came very close to hitting that raised embankment. Now, I tell you what, if we'd have hit that, the bus would have stood above average chance of tipping over.
Absolutely. It certainly would.
Failure, all right? Anyway, so we went on. There was passengers were complaining. They screamed at him, you know, slow down, watch what you're doing. A couple of people were saying to me, it's a good job that you were awake, because I tell you what, if he hadn't have been, we could have very well all been dead here. I couldn't rest on that journey, all right, because I had one eye on the road ahead and the other eye on that driver. And the amount of times I told him to slow down because of the weather conditions, the fact that he couldn't see where he was going, was ridiculous. And then it carried on. We got a bit further along and the passengers were saying, you know, you need to pull off, get into a service station, all the rest of it. We made him pull into a service station, and I don't know where it was. And we made him ring in for a replacement bus. He told us it was going to be round about an hour, and we said, fine, we don't mind waiting. Short time after that, he switched the engine on again, and lo and behold, did he miss the start to work?
Oh, for God.
So he said, well, shall we carry on? I said, well, yeah, but you do it in accordance with the weather conditions, and you don't go like a total madman, a lunatic.
Yeah.
So off we went again. He didn't know the route. The same passenger that had come down previously and wiped the windscreen down, he did know the route, and he was telling him which way to go at different road junctions, roundabouts.
What the heck is this guy not? Why isn't he on the M7, the M8? Like, that's the main...
Neil, I've no idea. He made some excuse that there had been a major hold-up on route, and he was taking an alternative route, all right? So he was off his prescribed route, which he would normally have taken. Anyway, I'm still sitting there, like, butt cheeks clenched all the time on my seat, watching what was going on, because he was not just exceeding the speed limits, I'm sure, but there was that much water on the road at one point, going through, and when you're coming into some of these small villages, he wasn't even slowing down. He was just going ahead at breakneck speed. On one particular approach, there was almost a river across the road. You couldn't see the tarmac. And he hit that at speed, and I was screaming at him, slow down, you'll aquaplane, you'll kill everybody on board. And still he took no notice, all right? This continued all the way along, and the best was yet to come. Eventually, we caught up with what was one of the later coaches from the same company to come down. He joined on the back of him, so obviously while we've been pulled in...
they caught up on you, yeah.
Yeah, they caught up and off he went. Yeah. We caught up with him, all right, and it wasn't that far away from the outskirts of Cork City. On the approach to Cork City, you've got a two-lane carriageway, all right? You're within the city limits. The other coach was in the offside lane, lane two, I'll turn it. He came up alongside him on lane one and was racing him along that road. And at that point, two guys came down to the middle of the aisle, sat down on the step between my seat and the driver and said, mate, you need to slow down because you're in the city now. This guy, as he was breakneck speed along, racing this other driver, was honking his horn at him and waving at him.
So you saw that, like a race between two coach drivers,
yeah, yeah.
Honking the horn and waving at each other like two joyriders.
Neil, when he positioned himself in lane one, my first thought was, don't you dare do what I think you're about to do.
And he did, yeah.
And he did. That was why these two guys came running straight down the aisle and sat down there.
and almost got a hold of him and said, listen, mate, you got to slow down here.
You couldn't make that story up, you know. I mean,
it was like something out of Mad Max. Honestly, it was the most terrifying journey I've ever been on, all right?
You were lucky. You were all lucky to get to Cork in one piece.
Mate, I tell you what, when these two guys sat next to him, he did put his brakes on pretty hard. And there was a young girl sitting in the seat behind me. She smacked her head off the back of the seat that I was sitting on. I know for a fact that she had to go to hospital the following day for concussion. I think she had an MRI and what have you.
Did you?
However,
okay. No, we're covering an awful lot of detail in the story, and rightly so.
Believe you me, I'm missing a lot out, Neil. All right, because of time.
My God.
Right. It was,
well, that's enough to be going on with. But like at any stage, what did he apologize or have any kind of? No, he just like as if he took absolutely zero notice of anybody around him.
Correct.
And
eventually, when we did pull into Glenmire Road, all right, and we all got out, he was the first one out, the driver, and everybody was getting out, having a go at him, you know, really giving him a hard time, saying, mate, we want your name, we want your number, we're going to complain, what you've done is absolutely terrible, you don't deserve to drive. Do you know what it is? If I'd have been a guard on that bus, I would have made him stop the bus and I would have arrested him for reckless driving.
You could have arrested him as a member of An Garda Síochána for reckless driving. You certainly could, yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Did you make a complaint, though, or log that?
I did. The following day, I put a huge report on Trustpilot, which is still on there, all right? And I think you're only allowed 700 and something words or something on a Trustpilot review. I had to cut it short because I could have written an essay on it.
Yeah.
I sent a copy of it off to the bus company.
Did they respond?
They responded and said, right, the bus it contains CCTV, blah, blah, blah. We'll be reviewing it all. However, we won't be able to share the findings with you because it's highly confidential.
Yeah.
In other words, all right, we'll look into it. Yeah, we will.
No,
yeah.
that's waffle. That isn't true. They could share it. It's important to let people know what
know,
the result of an investigation is.
Neil.
Okay. Yeah, well, I'm just. I mean, I'm appalled to hear that. It shouldn't surprise me. I mean, I think we're very lucky that we haven't had major catastrophes on our roads with regards to coaches. Just on the basis of what I've been hearing over the past few days alone, the near misses and how lucky people have been not to have been killed or badly injured. I think in some cases, some people aren't. He's never going to learn. Sure, he's not. This guy is beyond intervention as a driver, really. He just shouldn't be driving buses.
Neil, he should have been arrested on arrival at Glenmire. He should have been interned and never allowed anywhere near a bus, even as a passenger.
All right.
For the rest of his life. Honestly, it was I mean, I've been through some things and seen some things in life, but that was one of the most terrifying things I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was a time when you wished you were back in the force. I suppose you could have done some.
Mate, I'll tell you what. Honestly, if I didn't think I would have got locked up, I would have dragged him off that bus and given him the right old scene to put some sense into him. But common sense prevailed on my part.
Well, thankfully that didn't happen because you'd have been the one to be arrested as well, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Paul, thanks for sharing. Okay.
Hey, not a problem.
Horrifying. Thanks for sharing. Take care. Text 0868104106. I have a response, incidentally, from, don't know if I'll get time to it now at this stage, but CityLink came back to me again because, they had looked at. Is it fair to say they looked at the wrong CCTV footage on the bus? No, they looked at the right one, the wrong one, we don't know. But they certainly took a second look at it and they noticed some aspects that they didn't mention to me in the first statement they said from CityLink regarding this is unconnected from Paul's journey, it's another journey from Dublin to Cork after the hurling semi-final. So after the break, lads.
Get on to Prenderville.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prenderville Show on Red FM.
Get involved in the conversation. Pick up the phone 0818 104 106. Text 0868 104 106. Last bit of business this morning will be the Cork historian Liam O'Higgean on the early morning pubs. We'll get that conversation going because somebody asked more details on it. But now, with regards to CityLink, they came back and apologised regarding a typo in the first statement that they sent, because the first statement said it was the Cork to Dublin bus journey to the hurling match. And they said, indeed, it was the Dublin to Cork journey and it was a typo and we reviewed the CCTV. We've also contacted the local Gardaí, or they've been contacted by the local Gardaí, and they're assisting them with their inquiries regarding the incidences that they claim actually aren't accurate. So they're saying that whatever people thought they saw, they didn't. Now, they did see, because I don't know what the story is, but the first statement is different to the second one, because this statement that I've got from them now actually says different things to the first statement. You will know what I mean when I tell you. Their passenger safety is their highest priority. But they said the matter was escalated to CityLink senior management and the operations team and the operator contractor for a full review. Now, we have gone back to them and said, I have a fair idea who the operator contractor is, but I want them to confirm who is the operator contract that was operating the coaches on behalf of CityLink. They obviously have tendered out the business to other contractors, and I want them to confirm the operator contractor. So they examined the onboard CCTV footage and the driver's duty and rest records. And the review confirmed that the coach briefly... So this wasn't in the first time, but is in the second one. Our review confirmed that the coach briefly drifted onto the Cat's Eyes on the M8 shortly after Watergrass Hill Toll. A passenger raised concerns with the driver, who immediately stopped the coach to provide reassurance. Further concerns were raised by other passengers as the journey went on, and the driver again brought the coach to a safety stop. As a precaution, a replacement coach was dispatched and passengers continued their journey. We reviewed the driver's working hours and rest periods. Records confirmed the driver was fully compliant with all driving and rest time requirements and had received the required rest periods before operating the service vehicle again. Our review also confirmed that all relevant regulatory requirements and internal procedures intended to ensure drivers are fit, alert and capable of safely performing their duties had been fully satisfied. Following a detailed review of the CCTV and operational records, we found no evidence to substantiate the allegation that the driver was falling asleep while driving. CCTV footage reviewed, the driver showed no visible signs of fatigue. We also noted that the driver responded immediately when concerns were raised, safely pulling over to reassure passengers. CCTV showed that several passengers continued to express concerns and shout requests to the driver during the journey. Upon stopping safely, he contacted operation for guidance, believing this to be the most appropriate action, etc., etc., etc. So we are satisfied that the driver responded appropriately and professionally throughout the incident. However, our investigation found no evidence to support the allegations the driver was falling asleep or otherwise unable to operate the vehicle safely. If the vehicle unintentionally moves from its lane without indicating, the driver's seat vibrates significantly to alert the driver to take immediate corrective action. While we appreciate the circumstances were unsettling for those involved, our investigation found that the driver acted responsibly, responded promptly to passenger concerns and followed appropriate procedures throughout the event. I'm not reading out the entire statement, but pretty much nearly all of it. It's just too long. All information relating to this incident given to the Garda Síochána, we will continue to cooperate fully with the inquiries they may undertake. So if the driver was responding appropriately and professionally throughout the incident, why was the coach drifting? Why was that happening then? If the driver was in full control at all time and was behaving professionally throughout the incident, why did he stop twice regarding the concerns of some passengers? Is it a case that the passengers aren't telling the truth as to what they saw? If you say to me now that the driver was not falling asleep at the wheel, although you do confirm that the bus drifted onto the Cat's Eyes, why would it drift if he was in full control? Are you saying that people are making it up, that they didn't see the driver falling asleep on a number of occasions? So that's where we're at with that, lads. If there are any further developments, I'm expecting a response from them again with regards to who the operator contractor was, because maybe we should pick up the conversation with them. How do you know anyway that the driver was fit, alert and capable of safely performing the job? How do you know if you weren't there? How do you know that he was fully rested or that he slept the night before or whatever the case may be? You know, how can you tell unless you're living with the person 24/7? You can't actually tell. So anyway, if there's more updates on that, I will come back to them in the coming days. But last bit of business. Thanks so much, Liam. Thanks for taking the call. Good morning to you. We were referencing earlier on the early morning pubs because somebody asked about them earlier in the week. And I said at one stage there would have been dozens of them. And of course, the great Jim McKeown wrote about 33 early morning pubs back, say, for instance, in the mid-70s, right?
Yeah, well, then go back to the 50s now, Neil.
Yeah, OK. Well, a lot of the ones in the 50s would still have been there up into the 70s, I would suggest.
Yeah. Well, in the middle parish alone, in Grattan Street, there was Landers, Kelleher's, Good Ambler Inn, O'Callaghan's, Murphy's. You had Mickey Lahey's in Courthouse Street, and you had the Washington Inn. They were all very popular pubs at the time.
OK, so when you mention Landers, right... I believe that was the public house that was owned by my wife's grandfather, who would have come from probably around South Tipperary when he was a very young man with his wife at the time. Sadly, she died during childbirth. He became a guard for a period of time. He was a guard on Leaside. And after that, then opened that pub. Did your dad drink there?
He did. No, Freddie Cross owned it as well.
Okay. Well, Landers is the name of my wife's grandfather.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you a story about that. Now, every Saturday night, there'd be a fight outside one or two of the pubs, right? Now, it was beer fist, like, there was no knives or battles or anything, just two fellas stripped to the waist and out in the middle of the road, and they'd have a go, and we'd all make a circle around. And we were there one Saturday night, and while all this was going on, the cash till came flying out through the window. There was a fight inside in the bar, and we were all down our hands and knees picking up pennies.
Was it an unruly pub or what? I've been mortifying my in-laws now.
I don't care.
Why should you care? Tell the story. So you'd all stand around. Was it a bit of like Saturday night entertainment for the Marsh?
Exactly. And there was a lot of seven or eight pubs in Grattan Street.
But was there all a bar for the? Was there all a bar then for the proceeds of the till?
All a bar for myself included and the youngsters. We all down our hands and knees to see what we could find. It was mostly chutney bits and pennies and halfpennies and everything, you know. There was no paper cash that day.
Well, was your dad a docker then? Did he go to any of the early morning houses?
He did. And my father was known as Bess Higgins, because before he became a docker, he was driving a horse for Shane and Sullivan's, and the horse's name was Bess, which was Dick Turpin's horse's name.
That's right.
And when he became a docker, he was nicknamed Bess Higgins. He wasn't known as John Higgins.
So he would frequent the early morning pubs after a shift, before a shift. If he couldn't get a shift, what was it?
I'd say he was there morning, noon and night at times. We didn't know where he was.
I know, it's sad.
I know, but I mean, that was the doctors that time, they were daily paid and they got their pay and they went straight. Not all of them, no, don't get me wrong. But most of them went in for the drink and they, you know, just kind of stay there, if you like. But Grattan Street was a very, very busy street back in the 50s. You had the fire brigade were there, and when they were building St. Francis Church, the new church, the priests from the old church moved into the fire brigade, and the fire brigade moved over to amalgamate with Sullivan's Quay. That was in the late 49, I think that was.
Why would there have been a need for so many, though? If McKeown talks about 33 of them.
Well, you see, it was very little entertainment that time. And
no, but early mornings, like 7 o'clock.
Yeah, well, that would be people coming off and night working Dunlops and Fours and places as well. Couldn't be all dockers, like.
Shift, yeah.
Yeah, you know, they're just going, fella, that'd be fond of a pint or whatever. If you like, they had no other enjoyment, really. They couldn't afford, well, I suppose they could afford it if they put their mind to it. But as I say, Grattan Street was a very, very busy street.
Yeah.
And the St. Anthony's stores now in Liberty Street, the daughter that runs that shop now, her mother had a shop in Grattan Street as well, Mrs. Mullins. And, you know, it was like like a supermarket, really. And there was another shop thing at the corner of Henry Street and Grattan Street again. Henrietta, Manning's shop.
Yeah. So, you know, that was Osquelgo, wasn't it, on 109?
That was later on.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. You never ventured into any of the 33 early morning houses for a bottle of orange.
I never drank in my life.
But you could have had a Tanora or something.
In there with my father inside in the Washington Inn when there was sawdust on the floor.
I'll be darned.
And Mickey Lahis was around the corner in Courthouse Street.
Oh God! Would you say? Be fair to say, there's only two left now. Probably Charlie's and the Welcome Inn.
Welcome Inn is definitely there. I'm not sure about Charlie's.
I think Charlie's is as well. Yeah. One stage you'd have had Heafy's, the Black Swan, the Riverview, and the Donkey's Ears.
I remember all of those. And there was another one up in George's Quay in White Street. The Dewdrop Inn. And the Pelican Bear.
He's missed a couple then. Oh, my God.
you can't expect him to know him well.
Makes 35 of them. Food for thought, boy. All gone, most of them gone, but not forgotten.
And lots of people that went in from are gone. I mean, there was a pub off of Grattan Street there in Peter Street. It was known as Ducky in the Wardrobe. Did you ever hear of that?
No.
Well, during the Holy Hour, you had to close the shop, the pub, from 2:30 to 3:30. And there was this fellow inside in the bar on his own drinking. And the bear's maid was there. And our daughter came over. Our daughter's only 3 or 4. And she said, "Mammy, there's a girl knocking at the door." So she opened the door anyway. And he said, "Anyone else on the premises?" And she said, "No." But the young man was there. And she said, "Over right the girl." She said, "There's a fella after running upstairs and he's after ducking into the wardrobe."
And the name stuck.
The name stuck. Sullivan's was the name of the pub, but there was no one after us ducking in the wardrobe.
I love it, I love it, I love it. Okay, I'm out of time, Liam. I'm out of time, my friend, but stay in touch.
There was another one in Hanover Street over the Penny Dinners. There was another pub there, and it was Frankie Fowler, who was manager of the Manchester United. His sister owned that pub in Little Hanover Street. Oh. Run away now because you're a very busy man.
I'm not very busy. I'm just out of time. It's always a pleasure talking to the great Liam O'Higgins. Fine Cork man, fine Cork historian. It's amazing the stories. I mean, you mentioned the Washington Inn, and I have a very, very old black and white photograph of my grandmother. Kitty English from Madden's Buildings, when she first came up to Cork, was a young girl as a seamstress, married my grandfather, Paddy English. They lived in a little flat over the Washington Street Inn, the Washington Inn on Washington Street. And there are many of us way back in the pirate days, particularly when we had a pirate station on Parnell Place, that would visit from time to time the Traveller's Rest, which is long gone now as part of the big car park complex there. And that would always be full of dockers. I swear to God, you wouldn't meet nicer people. They were just a great bunch. There was a fabulous atmosphere there all the time. And it was just nothing but crack and laughter and fun. But I suppose behind all of those early morning pubs, there were also a lot of sad stories as well. Don't get me wrong. Okay, we'll pick up the conversation in the morning. Neil, I'm an air coach driver myself. I just arrived in Cork from Dublin and I found a medical device on the air coach. It would be in the air coach on Centre Park Road. It was a 7:30 a.m. bus from Dublin. Maybe whoever lost whatever they lost, a medical device, can get in touch with you and we can reunite them with it. Anybody lose anything or forget anything on the Cork-Dublin bus? Well, it's been found. Get in touch. Pick up the phone 0818 104 106 and we can sort you out. We have summer passes to give away all summer long. I'll open the phone lines now. We'll do our last few now at this stage for Mitchelstown Caves. A wonderful day visiting the Mitchelstown Caves. Family passes. Pick up the phone 0818 104 106. Get dialing now. We have some to give away. Ciara Evans is here for midday with Tom Grennan tickets and also tickets to give away for the Breton Hotel in Killarney. A fine spot. Have a good day. I'll see you tomorrow.